ಸ್ವಯಂ ವಿಶುಪಾದ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿವ್ರಾಜಕಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಶತ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀಮಾನ್ ಅಭಯ ಚರಣಾರವಿಂದ ಭಕ್ತಿವೇದಾಂತ ಗೋಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಮಹಾರಾಜ್ ಶೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ಕೀ ಜಯ ನಿತ್ಯಲೀಲಾ ಪ್ರವಿಷ್ಟ ವಿಶ್ವಪಾದ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿವ್ರಾಜಕಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಶತ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀಮಾನ್ ಭಕ್ತ ಸಿದ್ಧಾಂತ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ಮಹಾರಾಜ್ ಶೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ಕೀ ಅನಂದಗೋಡಿ ವೈಷ್ಣವ ವೃಂದಕಿ ನಾಮಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಶೀಲ ಹರಿದಾಸ್ ಠಾಕೂರ್ ಕಿ ಪ್ರೇಮ್ ಸಹೋ ಶ್ರೀ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧಾರ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರಭಕ್ತ ವೃಂದಕಿ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ರಾಧಾ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಗೋಪ ಗೋವಿನಾಥ ಶ್ಯಾಮಕುಂಡ ರಾಧಾ ಕುಂಡಗಿರಿ ಗೋವರ್ಧಾನಿಕಿ ಬೃಂದಾವನ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಮಾಯಾಪುರ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಮಧುರಪುರಿ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಜಗನ್ನಾಥ್ಪುರಿ ಧಾಮಕಿ ದ್ವಾರಕಾಪುರಿ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಗಂಗಮಾಯಿಕಿ ಯಮುನಾಮಾಯಿಕಿ ತುಳಸೀದೇವಿಕಿ ಭಕ್ತಿದೇವಿಕಿ ಸಾಮವೇದ ಭಕ್ತ ವೃಂದಕಿ ಗೌರ್ ಪ್ರೇಮನಂದಿ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಟು ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಟು ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಟು ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಟು ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರು ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಶ್ರೀ ಗೌರಂಗ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಟು ಶೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ್ ನಮೋ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪದಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣಪ್ರಸ್ಥಾಯ ಭೂದಲೇ ಶ್ರೀಮದೇ ಭಕ್ತಿವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿ ನಿಧಿ ನಾಮಿನಿ ನಮಸ್ತೆ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ದೇವಿ ಗೌರವಾಣಿ ಪ್ರಚಾರಿಣಿ ನಿರ್ವಿಶೇಷ ಶೂನ್ಯವಾದಿ ಪಾಶ್ಚಾತ್ಯ ದೇಶಧಾರಿಣಿ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ಪಾರ್ಥಾಯ ಪ್ರತಿಬೋಧಿತಾಂ ಭಗವದಾಂ ನಾರಾಯಣೇನ ಸ್ವಯಂ ವ್ಯಾಸೇನ ಗ್ರಥಿತಾಂ ಪುರಾಣ ಮುನಿನಾಂ ಮಧ್ಯೆ ಮಹಾಭಾರತಂ ಅದ್ವೈತಾಮೃತವರ್ಷಿಣಿ ಭಗವದಿ ಅಷ್ಟಾದಶಾಧ್ಯಾಯಿನಿ ಅಂಬತ್ವಾಮನುಸಂಧದಾಮಿ ಭಗವದ್ಗೀತೆ ಭವದ್ವೇಷಣಿ ನಮೋಸ್ತು ದೇವ್ಯಾಸ ವಿಶಾಲ ಬುದ್ಧೇ ಫುಲ್ಲಾರವಿಂದಾಯತಪತ್ರ ನೇತ್ರ ಯೇನ ತ್ವಯಾ ಭಾರತ ತೈಲಪೂರ್ಣ ಪ್ರಜ್ವಾಲಿತೋ ಜ್ಞಾನಮಯ ಪ್ರದೀಪ ಪ್ರಪನ್ನ ಪಾರಿಜಾತಾಯ ಸ್ತೋತ್ರವೇತ್ರೈಕ ಬಾಣಯೇ ಜ್ಞಾನಮುದ್ರಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣಾಯ ಗೀತಾಮೃತ ದುಹೇ ನಮಃ ಸರ್ವೋಪನಿಷದೋ ಗಾವೋ ದುಗ್ಧ ಗೋಪಾಲನಂದನ ಪಾರ್ಥೋ ವಲ್ಸ ಸುತೀರ್ಭೋಕ್ತ ದುಗ್ಧಂ ಗೀತಾಮೃತಂ ಮಹತ್ ವಸುದೇ ವಸುದಂ ದೇವಂ ಕಂಸ ಚಾಣೂರಮರ್ದನಂ ದೇವಗೀ ಪರಮಾನಂದಂ ಕೃಷ್ಣಂ ವಂದೇ ಜಗದ್ಗುರುಂ ಭೀಷ್ಮದ್ರೋಣತಟಾ ಜಯದ್ರಥ ಜಲಾ ಗಾಂಧಾರ ನೀಲೋಲ್ಪಲ ಶಲ್ಯಗ್ರಾಹವದೀ ಕೃಪೇಣ ವಹನಿ ಕರ್ಣೇನ ವೇಲಾ ಕುಲ ಅಶ್ವಥಾಮಾ ವಿಕರ್ಣ ಘೋರಮಕರ ದುರ್ಯೋಧನಾವರ್ತಿನಿ ಸೋತೀರ್ಣ ಖಲು ಪಾಂಡವೈರಣನದೀ ಕೈವರ್ತಕ ಕೇಶವ ಪಾರಾಶರ್ಯವಜ ಸರೋಜಮಲಂ ಗೀತಾರ್ಥಗಂಧೋಲ್ಕಟಂ ನಾನಾಖ್ಯಾನಕ ಕೇಸರಂ ಹರಿಕಥಾ ಸಂಬೋಧನಾಭೋದಿತಂ ಲೋಕೈ ಸಜ್ಜನ ಶಲ್ಪದೈರಹರಃ ಪೇವೀಯಮಾನಂ ಮುದಾ ಭೂಯಾತ್ ಭಾರತ ಪಂಕಜ ಕಲಿಮಲ ಪ್ರಧ್ವಂಸಿನ ಶ್ರೇಯಸೇ ಮೂಗಂ ಕರೋತಿ ವಾಚಾಲಂ ಪಂಗುಂ ಲಂಘಯತಿ ಗಿರಿಂ ಯಲ್ಕೃಪಾತಮಹಂ ವಂದೇ ಪರಮಾನಂದ ಮಾಧವಂ ಯಂ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮ ವರುಣೇಂದ್ರ ರುದ್ರ ಮರುದ ಸ್ವನ್ ವಂದಿ ದಿವ್ಯೈ ಸ್ತವೈರ್ ವೇದೈ ಸಾಂಗಪದೈ ಕ್ರಮ ಉಪನಿಷದೈರ್ ಗಾಯಂತಿ ಯಂ ಸಾಮಗಾಃ ಧ್ಯಾನಾವಸ್ಥಿತ ತದ್ಗದೇನ ಮನಸಾ ಪಶ್ಯಂತಿ ಯಂ ಯೋಗಿನೋ ಯಸ್ಯಾಂದಂ ನ ವಿದುಸುರಾಸುರಗಣೈ ದೇವಾಯ ತಸ್ಮೈ ನಮಃ ಸರ್ವತ್ರ ಗೋವಿಂದ ನಾಮ ಸಂಕೀರ್ತನಂ ಗೋವಿಂದ ಗೋವಿಂದ Krishna is saying, Prakritim purusham chaiva vidhyanadi ubhavavi vigaramscha gunamschaiva vidhi prakriti sambhavan. 19th, 20th verse, I think. So, Prakriti Purusha. Krishna says both are anadi. Anadi means that it has no beginning. And Vigaram and Gunam. Three modes of material nature and its effect of the modes of material nature. They are all coming from the Prakriti. And it is just like what they call as the cause and effect. Cause and effect. So everything, three modes of nature, it's cause and effect, everything is Prakriti. Then, Purusha is responsible for Sukham Dukham, happiness and distress, what comes from that. Earlier, in the 7th chapter, Krishna spoke about Paraprakriti and Avaraprakriti, isn't it? So there he mentioned the Ashtadha Prakriti, eight things. Bhumi Rabanalo Vai Khammano Buddhi Revacha Ahangare Diyame Bhinna Prakriti Ashtadha. Ashtadha Prakriti means the five material elements, mind, intelligence and false ego. Ahangara. 5 plus 3, 8. Those eight things are coming from the Abhara Prakriti. And then Krishna said, Abhareyam Idhisthunyam Prakriti Vidhime Param Jiva Bhudam. So living entities belong to the Paraprakriti, not to the Avaraprakriti. Yedam Dharide Jagat. And that is where that same thing what Krishna has spoken in the 7th chapter, he is saying here in this 13th chapter in a different way. Differentiating as Prakriti and Purusha. Right? So we saw yesterday that the Prakritisthani bhumte prakritijan gunan. In the next verse, Krishna is saying, Prakritistham. Prakritistham means when Purusha gets settled in Prakriti, the effect on Purusha, that's Prakritistham. Prakritistham means, if you look at the next verse, he will say that, Karyakarana kartutva hedu prakriti ruchyade purusha sukadukhanam, and after that purusha prakriti stohi. These verses 19, 20, 21 all talks about the situation with purusha and prakriti. So when purusha is established, when purusha comes into contact with prakriti, purusha gets involved in prakriti. Jiva by nature has nothing to do with Prakriti. Jiva belongs to Purusha. Jiva does not belong to Prakriti. But when Jiva makes contact with Prakriti, he becomes Prakritistham. Prakritistham means he gets settled in Prakriti. We are all in that category. Jivas have come and we got established in the Prakriti. We made contact with Prakriti and we feel comfortable with Prakriti. That kind of situation. Purusha prakritistohi bunche prakriti jan gunat. Once you have come into prakriti, once you have come to prakriti and established in prakriti, then what will happen? Bunjan prakriti and gunat. You will start eating the food of prakriti, which is the three modes of nature. So bhumte prakriti jan gunat. That will happen. Karanam gunasangase sadasad yoni janmasu. So these verses, what Krishna has spoken here, that Prakriti has her own way of handling us. She will give you some lot of distress and then she will give you some happiness. Sukham, dukham. This is Prakriti's nature is like that. You can't do anything about it. Prakriti by its very nature is like that. She'll give you a lot of distress and then she'll give you some happiness. When you get the happiness, you'll forget all the distress. And then you'll think everything is nice. And then again lot of distress comes. And then again she gives you some happiness. In this way, back and forth between Sukham Dukham, very little happiness, a lot of distress, and in between we will be, this is Prakriti Stobi, what Krishna said there, Prakriti Stobi Bunjan Prakriti, Bungtai Prakriti Jan Gunan means that. Prakriti Purusha Prakriti Stohi, Bungtai Prakriti Jan Gunan means that. That he gets affected by the Prakriti, and then happiness and distress one after the other comes, right? So so lot of distress and then some little happiness will come from somewhere and then you feel everything is not too bad. This not too bad comes from that, from this this thing. This is how we all say like that. How are you doing? Not too bad, we say. It's not too bad, is this? This Bhungte Prakritijan Gunan. Yeah. So, with that, the dukkham has gone. Immediately, the dukkham is gone completely. And Prakriti has got all these tools in her hand, how to play with us, right? And she'll give you a lot of distress, and then she'll give you a little happiness, right? And because we like this happiness so much, sukham, due to that, we are not able, because of that only, you won't be able to give up dukkham, because of the attachment for sukham. This is how it works. Because we have attachment for sukham, we are not able to give up the dukkham. We are unable to give up the dukkham, right? So the answer to this question is, what Krishna is saying here is that either you accept both sukham and dukkham without complaining, accept both of them, right? Even though a lot of dukkham and little sukham, you have to accept all of it, right? Or you give up your attachment to both sukham and dukkham. These are the two options we have, Krishna has given us. If you are in the Prakriti, what will happen is, Prakriti will give you a lot of happiness and lot of distress and happiness. More lot of distress and little bit of happiness. But because we are attached to happiness, we will have to accept the distress also. You can't choose one of that. That's not in our control. That's the Prakriti's rule is like that. You have to accept both sukham and dukkham. So the option is, Krishna is saying, either you accept both, or because you have asakti for sukham, so you accept dukkham also. Or the alternative is that you give up attachment to both of that. That is the preferred option. Attachment to asakti for happiness or distress, if you can give it up both, Krishna says that's the best. But we don't choose that, we choose the other one. So they suffer, then we, Krishna says, suffer. That's, you can, there's no other alternative to that, right? So, as long as we have this body, right, this sukham dukham will be there. It's a part of the prarabdham, right? And if you accept one, you have to accept the other also. And if you take one of them, if you accept only sukham, that is not possible. You got to accept dukkham as well, right? And even in the case of Ishvara, it applies. Once you come into Prakriti, it is like that, yeah? So, if you get attached to one, then you will have to accept the suffering of the other as well, yeah? So, that is what he is saying here. Purusha sukha dukkhanam bhoktrutva hetu ruchyade. See that? 20th verse, second part. Karya karana kartrutve hedu prakriti ruchyade purusha sukha dukkhanam bhoktrutve hedu ruchyade. Purusha sukha dukkhanam bhoktrutve hedu ruchyade. There is no choice in there, right? So, actually this bhoktrutvam, that means feeling that I am enjoying, I am suffering, is avidya it is. Compared to the senses, you are getting some sense gratification and you are thinking falsely that I am enjoying. So that is what he is saying here. Bhoktrutvam hetu ruchyate, he says, bhoktrutvam is ajnanam, avidya it is. And that is why Krishna said the preferred option is not to get attached to either of them, happiness or distress. That's the preferred one. But if you can't do that, then the alternative is the other one. Right. So, strictly speaking, there is no bhoktrutvam. And karta bhokta, all these are avidya. Karta bhokta is avidya. But this avidya is inside us for a very long period of time. Because of several bodies we went through and we have become habituated to that. It has become a habit with us to think of it as happiness and distress, right? So, so even after hearing Bhagavad Gita, or even after hearing Upanishads, right? If you keep on hearing this, I am not the doer, I am not the enjoyer, I am only a witness. if all these knowledges goes in still, right, it is difficult to come out of that. Yeah. So that is what he is saying here. Nityeshwaratvad Ishwarasya tat pragrityo abhiyuktam nityatvena bhavitam pragrityadvayavatvam evahi Ishwarasya ishat Ishwaratvam. So, even if you have come to know this thing, what Krishna is saying here, even if you have come to know that, due to the influence of Purva Vasana, what is inside us, due to that, and say when you hear all these things in Salsangam or somewhere, wherever you hear that, and once you go out of this place, again this I am the doer, I am the enjoyer comes back. Is it not? Kartha Bhokta comes back to us again, right? And one way of getting rid of that is through culturing the knowledge, spiritual knowledge. Culturing the spiritual knowledge through vijaram, constantly contemplating on that, and through mananam, and by practicing the spiritual sadhana process. In that way, you will have to win over this concept that happiness and distress and I am the doer and I am the enjoyer. You have to come out of that through vichara margam, through constant reflection and contemplation on that, right? So, with that you have to win over the purva vasana, the previous vasanas what we have created. And I am not karta, I am not bhokta, I am not doer, I am not enjoyer. And continuously culturing that, I am just a machine, Krishna is the operator. Krishna is operating, I am the machine. He is the operator, I am the machine. In that way, pass on the doer and enjoyer to Krishna rather than taking it upon yourself. That's one method of doing that. So, and Krishna is present inside us and He is actually the karta, He is actually the bhokta. And actually that is the reality, but because of our avidya inside, this ahangaram steps in and ahangaram takes over the responsibility. That is what's happening normally. But it will take a long time to come to that understanding, because we got conditioned in this way through different bodies while passing through, and even in this body also, always I am doing it, I am getting the result. This become our permanent way of thinking. It has to change, because Krishna is saying this, that's what he is saying, that vigaramsya gunamsyaiva vidhi prakriti sambhavan purusha sukadukkanam bhoktrate heturichyade. So this, how sukham dukham has become our habit, is like this, that due to our avidya. So he is the root cause of all living entities. And till we realize that only Krishna exists here, in all living entities, Krishna is present, till that experience comes, this contemplation has to continue. It is gradually one has to build it up within oneself, right? Otherwise, sukham dukham will come one after the other, and sukham will give you happiness, dukham will give you distress, and When sukham comes, you will develop a desire to have it again. Again, I should have the sukham. This thought will come inside, right? And when dukham comes, you want to come escape out of it as quickly as possible. So you can see the effect of that. Sukham, dukham, this is how it works on us. When we get sukham in life, we want it again, want to have that again. When dukham comes, we want to get rid of it as quickly as possible. So all this thinking is an after effect of this. It's important because Krishna is saying, Karya karana kartrutva hedu pragati ruchyade purusha sukaduktanam boktrate hedu ruchyade. If you analyze that verse, you will see this important thing, that karya karana kartrutvam. Kartrutvam has also called pragati, is responsible for that. And bhoktratam has come from the purusha. Sukadukhanam bhoktrata hetruchyate. So these two things. One, when sukham comes, we want it back again. When sukham comes, then sukham will go. Sukham won't stay, right? So, and that feeling that I want the sukham back again is what is called a ragam, attachment, right? Sukham comes and gives you some happiness, and then when it goes away, you want it back again. That's attachment. Similarly, dukkham, when it comes, and will it not go, leave us? How soon will it leave us? That thought comes in, right? And if you become very particular about that, I should leave the dukkham as quickly as possible, that is aversion. That is aversion. And so when both these two things happen, it is the after effect of that. After effect of sukham dukkham, right? You can see this in life if you properly on your own think about it, right? This is our greatest problem in living in this world, the sukham dukham. How they come and they give us trouble all the time, one way or the other, right? So, therefore, when we say all these things, generally, people will say, I don't want to hear all this Vedantam. I'm having problem, you will say. Straight away they will say like this. I'm having these problems, right? So, actually, without knowing all these things, how are we going to escape from this mess? That's what Krishna is saying to us. Without knowing the Prakriti and the Purusha properly, how are you going to become free from this, right? And without and hesitating to know what Krishna is saying, and keeping a body which is jadam, right? And always trying to fix this body continuously, thinking that it will come out properly. And in that process, one after the other, all the senses start failing. The mind also becomes problematic. The buddhi becomes affected, right? And actually what we do in this world is that keeping this body as the most important thing in life, to maintain this body, we hand over our whole thing called life for some occupation, and in that way hand over everything to that, and in that process it all gets damaged. And even though you may have made a lot of money from that, and a lot of bank deposits and everything, and thinking about that and feeling that I have done well, but the end result is lots of diseases starts coming to this body at the end, right? And also your mind also has become affected by that. And ultimately that false ego has been hit very hard, and at the end with all these desires inside, you are leaving the body and leaving this world. That's the end result of this. So Krishna is explaining these things to us to make us understand how important it is to come out of this cycle of birth and death. And that's what he is explaining in these few verses. He's trying to tell us that, you see, we have in the modern world today, we have developed a lifestyle where a major part of our life we have to hand over to some employer, whoever it may be, and in his service you spend all your valuable time in life to serve him in the name of making a living. And in that process what happened is that all the best faculties Krishna has given us, mind, intelligence, senses, everything, we have made it work so hard that at the end of it, it all became useless. And that means keeping this body as the most important thing in life, we spend the whole life. And in that process, the body eventually gets destroyed anyway, no matter what happens. And finally, we leave this world. So, the point he is making is that your life is a failure. In strict terms, our life is a failure. We didn't make the best out of it. We have lost the battle. That's what he is saying here. Right? So, due to unbelievable compassion of the rishis are saying to us that the knowledge what they have given us through so many parambara, through different rishis, what the knowledge they have left with us, if you want to use that knowledge properly, we have to elevate ourselves a lot, right? And lot of bhakti is required, lot of shraddha is required, and you don't require sannyasam and everything for this. Sannyasam is another side to it, right? And even if you take sannyasam, it's useless, because whatever ashram one is situated, brahmachari, grahastam, vanaprastam, whatever it may be, or sannyasam, wherever Krishna has put us in, there itself one should be able to go deeper into this subject. And work has to work very sincerely in whichever conditions Krishna has left us in this world, right? So this is the important thing coming out from these verses, what Krishna has spoken, right? And if it is applicable to everybody, including me, it's the same thing applies, right? It is not for a performance purposes, it is to wake us up all that this is our situation, to come to understand that, yeah? And and it is not for simply for preaching purposes, it is for translating into life. Otherwise it's all useless. Bhagavad Gita is useless if it has not changed my life, way of thinking. This is the important thing. We think that Bhagavad Gita is all preaching to others, right? And have big what is they called, Zoom programs and all that. It's all okay, you can do all that. But at the end of the day, if these verses has not sunk in and hasn't changed our life, we haven't got any benefit from Bhagavad Gita. That's the principle, right? So, Krishna's point is that when one is very sick, right, and he gets a medicine which is able to cure his disease, we are very sick, and this is the medicine. Krishna says, you should accept it, and me as well as you have to accept it. Only then you will escape, I will escape. Otherwise we won't escape. We will be back here again in the same situation, right? So that is why this verses in the Bhagavad Gita, one has to take it very, very seriously. It all means something. It's not just for preaching to others and repetition, but you have to understand what Krishna is saying. Yeah, he is saying here that the karyakara, this verse, prakritim purusham chaiva. First, understand prakriti and purusha very well. Vidyanadi ubhavami vigaramsha gunamshaiva vidhi prakriti sambhavan. Then he said that prakriti means trigunam, three modes of nature, which is nothing but maya. And everything that comes from maya, from the three modes of nature, is prakriti. Prakriti isharasya vikara karana shakti, trigunatmiya maya. So vikaram, gunam, they are all the products of this maya, and that's all belong to prakriti. Then he said here, karya karana kartrutve hedu prakriti ruchyate. Hedu prakriti ruchyate. And purusha sukadukhana boktrute hedu ruchyate. So, karyam is this body. Then five senses of knowledge and five senses of action. Then mind, intelligence and buddhi. All these things together. That is all what we know as the apara prakriti. Then, so, because all these things come from prakriti, karya shariram and karanam, that is what that first line is saying. Karya karana kartrutve. Hetu prakriti ruchyate. Karya shariram and karanam, and the force that creates is called karya karana kartrutvam, because they come from prakriti. And in other words, this karya karana kartrutvam, cause and effect, and the I am the doer, all these things, the cause behind that is Prakriti. The cause behind that is Prakriti. So that is what Krishna has mentioned there. And Bhagavad Gita, Kinchida Gita, Bhajagovindam prayers, you can see that verse. Bhagavad Gita, Kinchida Gita, Ganga Jalamavi, Kaniga Pita. So Bhagavad Gita's position is like that. As Krishna said before, Sulpam Apyasya Dharmasya Trayade Mahado Bhayad, right? Is dharmam, even if you take a little bit of that and able to imbibe that, in other words, imbibe means to make it as yours, with this desire that I want to escape from this mess. If you study like that, before the body drops away, we have to realize, see, you have to realize the truth. And with this understanding that I have to escape from this situation, we are trapped in the Prakriti, and Prakriti has done this to us, and that is not going to change. That is the rule, the way Krishna has set it up. And Krishna says the way to escape from that is that you, that the beginning of that is accepting the happiness and distress, not getting attached to either of that. So, kriyade yasayamena na charcha. Kriyade yasayamena na charcha. If one takes it, Krishna says, there won't be discussion with Yama at the time of death. There is no need to discuss then, right? So, otherwise, Yama says in the Kathopanishad, mrityo mrityo apnoti, from one death to another death, again come back, right? Coming and going, right? So, even Yama, when you go to Yama's planet, Samyamini Puri, Yama will get fed up with us, seeing coming back again and again. We are regular visitors to his place also. So, apparently Yama feels that I wish he didn't come back again. He thinks like that. So, this sukham dukham, happiness and distress, right? Why we are experiencing that is because of this asakti. What you call as asakti, right? Then as asakti into the apara prakriti. Apara prakriti, right? So, so this apara prakriti, what Krishna has spoken in the 7th chapter also, it has got this problem. What are they? 5 senses. Shabdam, sparsham, rupam, rasam, gandham. These 5 things. This is apara prakriti. What else is apara prakriti? Mind. Thinking. Sangalpam, vikalpam. Apara prakriti. Right? Then ahangaram. Feeling, identification with all the false things and taking pride from that. Ahangaram. This is all apara prakriti. Right? And you may think in that, if without all this, what else have we to do? If you think like that, right? Krishna said there in the 7th chapter, separately from that, there is another thing, and that is paraprakriti. Our paraprakriti, right? What is that? This, what we are doing with these 5 senses, and with the mind, intelligence, and ego, all what we are doing like this, activities, there is paramprakriti who remains separate from this and remain as a witness to everything what is going on in the apara prakriti. Bhagavad Gita is a science actually. In the sense, Krishna is explaining that this is how the creation is. We are created in this way. It is up to us to understand it and accept it. Rather than getting carried away by bodily identification and getting cheated by the body at the end, best thing is to take what Krishna is saying seriously. Krishna is saying to us, your apara prakriti will do all these things. All our life in this world is apara prakriti. 5 senses, mind, intelligence and ego. Five senses enjoy sense gratification. Mind enjoys the sangalpam, vigalpam, thinking about this way, that way, all those things. And ahangaram enjoys the kartrutvam, bhoktrutvam. I am the doer, I am the enjoyer. And in that way, ahangaram enjoys. This whole activity, Sabara Prakriti, Krishna says. Outside this, there is another Prakriti in us, which is called Para Prakriti, which is actually what we are, who remains as a witness to everything, what is going on in the Abhara Prakriti. That's what he is explaining here, right? So, and that is what Krishna said there, Jiva Bhutam Mahabaho, Yedam Dharide Jagat, the Jiva Bhutam, right? So, Jiva Bhutam, in order to turn our attention from this Abhara Prakriti to Para Prakriti, that is the way to escape from this. Our whole attention is in the Abhara Prakriti at the moment. Five senses. These things has to be, you have to sit alone and think about it, what Krishna is saying. Krishna is saying that this Abhara Prakriti is like this. Five senses and sense gratification through the senses. Then you have got the mind, you have got the intelligence, and you have got the ahangaram. So, mind, intelligence and ahangaram, and these five senses together is your Abhara Prakriti, and you are busy with that. As long as you keep busy with this Abhara Prakriti, there is no way to escape. The way to escape from that is turn your attention towards Para Prakriti, which is actually our real nature, and who is actually a witness to everything what is going on in the Abhara Prakriti. And turning our attention from Abhara Prakriti to this Para Prakriti is the way to escape from this. There is no other way, right? So, and that Para Prakriti, Krishna calls here as Purusha. That is Purusha, right? If you accept this, then you will escape from here. Otherwise, there is no chance, right? Both for you and for me. It's the only way, right? So, as long as you are in the Para Prakriti, you are not affected by this. But once you are in the Abhara Prakriti, you are affected by that, right? So, so this Para Prakriti, Abhara Prakriti, that is why that seventh chapter is important in the Bhagavad Gita. Why that was discussed very much there, right? So, so what is this Para Prakriti then? What we are feeling inside us, me, my existence, aham, aham, that bodham, awareness inside us, right? And that experience is saying that I am not this body. That aham aham awareness inside us is giving us an indication that we are not this body. We are that awareness actually. And similarly, we are not mind, we are not the buddhi, we are not the ahangaram, we are not the vasanas inside, but actually we are nothing but the awareness or bodham inside us. Right? And so, even though you are prakritistam, even though you are in the prakriti, prakritistam means you are in the prakriti, sukham, dukham can come and go, but it has happened for a very long time. what will happen if you have to take birth again? The same story will repeat, isn't it? Even if we get a human body again, nursery class, primary class, and then the secondary college, school, college, university, and then computer, marriage, family, children, this cycle continue repeat again and again, right? Children, grandchildren, and then death. So, that is what Punarabhi Jananam, Punarabhi Maranam. It's no good reciting the verses till accept it. That acceptance is not there. We go back to Abhara Prakriti again and busy with the Abhara Prakriti, right? So, that is what is called a material existence. This Abhara Prakriti is called material existence, right? And again coming back, again living another life in the same way, continuing through that, yeah? So, Krishna is saying that if you are disgusted with this Abhara Prakriti, if you had enough of that, then Abhara Prakriti will leave you. And Paraprakriti, you will get established in the Paraprakriti, right? And one who is established in the Paraprakriti is liberated, Jiva, Jivan Mukta, right? Whereas one who is in the Aparaprakriti, he is in bondage. He is in bondage, right? So, one who is established in the Paraprakriti, he is called Swastha. One who is established in the Aparaprakriti, he is called a Prakritistam. That's how those words have come. Purusho Prakritistohi Bhunkte Prakritijan Gunan Karanam Gunasangasya Sadasad Yoni Janmasu. So, so, then he says, in the 21st verse he said, Karya karana kartrutva hetu prakriti ruchyate, purusham sukadukhanam boktrutva hetu ruchyate. Then purusha prakritistohi bunjan prakritijan gunan, karanam gunasangasya sadasad yoni janmasu. Then he is saying that, e ubadrashta anumantacha bharta bhokta maheshwara, Paramalmeni chapyukto dehesmin purushapara. So, Ubadrashta Anumanda. Two things there. Yeah. Ubadrashta Anumanda cha Bharta Bhokta Maheshwara. In this body, Purusha is different. He is a Sakshi. And that is Antaryami, who is present inside. One who gives permission for all these things to happen. Maheshwara, Paramatma, all these things are spoken about him. So, Ubadrashta, Samipastha, San, Drashta, Swayam, Avyabrado, Yada, Hrithvik, Yajamaneshu, Yajna, Karmam, Vyabradeshu, Tatastham, Anyam, Avyabrado, Yajna, Vidya, Kushalam, Ritvik Yajamani Vyapara Gunadoshanam Ikshida Tadvat Kaya Karana Vyapareshu Avyapritaha Anyo Vilakshanaha Tesham Kaya Karananam Sarva Savyaparanam Sami Pena Drashta Ubadrashta. See, if Purusha is Prakritistam, right, and if he is attached to Prakriti, suppose he is in the Abhara Prakriti and he is attached to that Aparaprakriti, he has to accept sukham, dukham and all the effect of the three modes of nature. There is no way of getting out of it. If Purusha is in the Prakriti, and that means Prakritistam, if he is in Prakritistam, or if he is attached to Prakriti, whatever sukham, dukham happens in the Prakriti, and the effect of the three modes of nature, he has to accept it, right? And and that distress is not because you are having contact with the Prakriti. Not the suffering is not because of the contact with the Prakriti, but this identification with the Prakriti. Just because we are having contact with Prakriti, it doesn't happen, Krishna says. But because you are identifying with the Prakriti, this identification is the problem. Yeah. So, just like in the night, you are sleeping very well, right? And you are suddenly in the dream, it comes, you are in a big forest, dense forest. And you suddenly saw a tiger coming towards you to get you. You saw all that dreams. And then you fell because of the fear you experienced in the night. Suddenly you fell off from the bed, from the mattress, you fell onto the floor, right? And then you woke up and you looked everywhere, you're in the bedroom. There is no forest, there is no tiger, there's nothing, right? And you are completely comfortable in your room, but how did this dream come then? Right? There is no answer to that, because all what has happened in the dream state was, you identified with that situation, that you were in the forest. When the dream happened, you were in the forest, and you identified with that forest environment such, you felt that the tiger is there, and you got fearful of the tiger, and in that identification, you fell off from the bed. And then you woke up from that and you realized that it was not the reality. That's what has happened actually in the dream, isn't it? That you were sleeping comfortably and then the dream came, and in the dream you identified with that dream, and due to that identification you suffered. Nothing actually happened. It's the same thing Krishna is saying here. That when you go into Prakriti, nothing is happening actually. It is due to our identification with the Prakriti, this Sukham and Dukham is coming. Just like in the dream. Just like in the dream, right? So, at that moment, when this happened in the bedroom, that you are sleeping in the bed, but in the dream came up, in the dream you felt the forest, the tiger, and the tiger attacking you, and suddenly you fell off. All that happened, which is not real, but it has happened in that dream state. And you fell off and you realized that it was a dream later. So in the same way, Krishna is saying also that there was no witness to it at that moment. There was no witness to it, right? But still, you had to suffer the tiger's attack in the dream. You had to suffer from that, is it not? So, what is the solution for that distress in the dream, what you have felt, right? The only solution is to wake up from the dream, right? Once you woke up from the dream, then what happens? You are coming back to your original state, and you are in the swastham stage, peaceful state, right? So that is what he is saying here. Ubadrashta anumandaja bharta bhokta maheshwara paramalpiricha pitto dehesvin purushapara. In other words, right, this is the only way you can explain this process, what's happening to us in the dream. In the dream, you didn't identify, it so happened in that way that you suffered from the dream, even though actually it has not happened. Similarly, in Prakriti also, even if you have to, even if you are inside the Prakriti, the suffering is coming from due to identification. Right? So, when you have stuck with Prakriti, attached to everything, and you are busy with Prakriti, that is called a Prakriti Jam, right? Jam means something from which is born, germinate. The English word comes from this Sanskrit word, Jam, germinate. It comes from that. Similarly, generation, all this is, the root is Jam, and Jam is from the Sanskrit, it has come, these things. So, because you are eating the three modes of nature, that is a bhunkte prakritijan gunan, he says there, isn't it, in the last verse. Purusha prakritistohi bhunkte prakritijan gunan. Bhunkte means that you are in the enjoying these three modes, sattvam, rajasa, tamasa. Bhunkte prakritijan gunan, due to that, karanam gunasangasya sadasad yoni janmasu. So we became prakritistam due to the contact with these three modes of nature, and due to this association with sattugunam, rajagunam, tamogunam, due to that sangam, sometimes it is purely the three modes of nature will decide what kind of body we will get. Because based on the three modes of nature, we will create the vasana. Based on the vasanas, we will do the work. So, you can see it's that cycle continuous like that. So, three modes of nature will decide sadasad yoni janmasu. whether you have to get another womb of another mother, whether it is satya or asatya. Asatya means lower bodies, in other words, right? So he will take birth in higher bodies or in the lower bodies, right? And due to that, we get good birth and bad birth. Bad birth means like plants, trees, animals, birds, all these are useless births, right? So, and as long as we have contact with the three modes of nature, we will keep taking birth and death, that cycle will continue, right? And that also means it can be in the form of demons, asuras, or even the form of devadas, or in the form of human beings. If sattvagunam builds up inside, devada form. Rajogunam builds up inside, human form. Tamogunam builds up inside, asura form, rakshasa form, in that way. So that is what that verse is saying. Karanam gunasangasya sad asad yoni janmasu. Very clear. Karanam gunasangasya. Three modes of nature will decide what kind of birth you must have next life. Very straightforward. So importance of sattvagunam. Sattvagunam elevates a person. Rajogunam puts him in the middle level. Tamogunam degrades him. That is why all the other species, 8.4 million, or loads of those species is coming from the tamogunam. Human species comes from the rajogunam. Devada forms, higher species, they all come from the sattvagunam. So, purusha prakritistohi bhunjan bhumte prakritijan gunan karanam gunasangasya sadasad yoni janmasu. That's an important line. Karanam gunasangasya sadasad yoni janmasu. Throughout Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavadam, Krishna is saying sattval sanjayade jnanam. Sattvagunam is the only answer to this problem. Without sattvagunam, it won't happen. Right? So, that is what he is saying there. Then, so, based on the gunam, next body, based on the gunam, right? So, then he said here, Ubadrashta anumandaja bharta bhokta maheshwara paramalpedi chapikto dehesmin purushapara. Dehesmin purushapara. He says that this apara prakriti, that is what Krishna calls normally as prakriti. Apara prakriti is prakriti, right? Then he is going to say to us that this para prakriti is nothing but paramatma. Para prakriti is paramatma. Paramalpmedi chapyukto dehesmin purusha para. Para prakriti is paramatma, andaryami, Krishna. That is para prakriti, right? So, this behind this prakriti, which Krishna calls apara prakriti, Krishna calls prakriti means apara prakriti, and Krishna calls para prakriti as purusha, or para prakriti also as, in other words, paramatma. Paramalpmedi chapyukto. So these two terms, paraprakriti, aparaprakriti, we should be very clear on that. What aparaprakriti means, what paraprakriti means. We are stuck in the aparaprakriti. Krishna is the paraprakriti, which is Paramatma Purusha. If we leave this aparaprakriti and come to paraprakriti, we escape. If you don't leave aparaprakriti, if you stay in the aparaprakriti, repeated birth and death. That's the answer to that. So, that's what he's saying here. Aparaprakriti calls it as prakriti, and paraprakriti, he's saying, is not different from paramatma. And behind this prakriti, Krishna is saying, ubadrashta. That ubadrashta means, in order to show its speciality, what is that? He is sitting inside us, and but he is separate from the rest. Who? Purusha. Purusha is sitting inside us, but he is separate from the rest. Right? And he is inside us in such a way that he is seeing everything what is happening in the apara prakriti. That means Andaryami inside us, each one of us. He sits there and he observes everything what the apara prakriti is doing. as a witness to everything. And this Purusha, who is identifying with it, he observes all my experiences in this body, and within every one of us, observing our vasanas and our upadhi. Upadhi means the subtle body, basically. Subtle body, right? Because he is listening to, looking into our upadhi, and he is a witness to it, therefore he is called upadrashta. Upadhi drashtava. That's how this upadrashta comes. Our upadhi means our subtle body. Mind, intelligence, ego, senses, all those things. That's the whole subtle body. What they are doing based on the vasanas inside that subtle body, that is the our upadhi. So whatever that is happening, the upadhi, he is the drashtava of that. He is the seer of that. But outside this he is situated. So therefore he is called upadrashta. One who is observing all the upadhis. Right? And upadrashtav, right? Similarly, anumanta. And anumanta means he is only a witness and he allows you to do what you want to do. Gives you permission, anumati. That's how this anumanta comes. So upadrashta, anumanta. Upadrashta means he observes our upadhis, mind, intelligence, ego, senses and vasanas, which is in the chittam, everything, completely. All what is going on in the upadhi, he observes that from outside, drashtava. Drashtava means the seer. Because he is staying outside and observing the upadhi, he is called upadrashta. Then, when we are inside the upadhi, identifying with the upadhi, the jiva, when it is doing all sorts of things based on its vasana, not interfering in that, but allowing it to do what it wants to do according to its vasana, gives permission. Permission means anumati. And one who gives anumati is anumanta. So this is how those two words have come. Upadrashta and anumanta. And for example, if he wants sense gratification, he is allowed to have that. Allow everyone to do what they want to do. Right? And suppose you want to listen to some music, he says you go enjoy the music, right? Or if you want to sleep, you sleep, right? And in this way, if he wants to wake up from the sleep, you wake up. In this way, making everyone to do what they want to do, and this is anumanta, right? Upadrashta, anumanta, karta, bhokta, bharta, bhokta, maheshwara, right? Bharta means keeping a control on us, right? From inside, andaryami. And in our life, bodham, what has happened in the past, and what is happening now, and what is going to happen in the future, all these things he knows. He knows what we are doing. He knows what we have done in the past. And he also knows what will happen to us in the future. And this is why, if you look into Vishnu Sahasranama, you will find there, Bhuda Bhavya Bhavat Prabhu. Andaryami, it is that. Bhudam Bhavyam Bhavat Prabhu. He is conscious of all these things as far as we are concerned, right? What has happened in the past, he knows. What's happening now, he knows. And what's going to happen in the future, he knows. So he has a total control on all of us in the form of Andaryami present inside us. Who? This Paramatma, Andaryami. Paramatma, Andaryami. And he is Bhuda Bhavya Bhavat Prabhu. So, therefore, me, who has become a jiva, that's what I am identifying as jiva. Jiva do not know this, about this position of Andaryami. But that Prabhu, who is Upadrashta and Anumanta, he knows karta, bhokta, he knows me. So here in this verse, what he is talking about is Saguna Brahma. Saguna Brahma means what is spoken here, right? So Bharta Bhokta Maheshwara is saying, that's referring to Saguna Brahma, not Nirguna Brahma. Saguna Brahma it is referring to, right? So one who is experiencing everything, but at the same time one who is not involved in that, independently observing everything, but he is conscious of everything, what is going on, right? The jiva is experiencing everything, he is observing, Antaryami is observing that. So he is beyond everything, untouched by that, therefore he is Maheshwara. And then he said, Paramatmedi chapyukto dehesmin purusha para. Paramatmedi chapyukto dehesmin purusha para. Right? He is called, addressed as Paramatma, and in this body as Purusha, in the form Purusha Parapradi, in this way. He is present inside as the Purusha, and in the Paraprakriti form, present in us in the form of Jiva. Aham, aham, that awareness, Jiva Bhav. Right? So, just like the space we discussed yesterday, in the big pot, there is space. There is space outside. Similarly, in this pot, he is stuck like this. Who? Antaryami is present inside, and when it is inside this, it appears as though the jiva form is like the space that is caught inside the pot. That's a comparison to make us more clarity on that. What is the connection between jiva and Antaryami? Antaryami is present everywhere. Is present inside, outside, everywhere. But when you take the pot, there is space inside the pot, and there is space outside the pot. When the pot is broken, the space is one. There is not. Now we call it, for practical purposes, we call it inside, outside. Actually, there is only one space. Similarly, this body is like that. Antaryami is inside, Antaryami is outside. But when Antaryami is inside, for practical purposes, we say that he is stuck inside the pot. And that part of Antaryami, which is in that state, inside the pot, is called Jiva. Is called Jiva, right? So, yeah. So, Jiva's nature, you can see, Jiva is that space inside the pot, which is present inside this pot. So, that is the Jiva Bhav. Antaryami is inside as well as outside. That is the Mahagasham. Gadagasham is the Jiva. Gadagasham is Jiva. Mahagasham is the Antaryami. The same example Subrahmarshi used in the Brahma Vilesham also. Gadagasham, Madhabhine, Mahagasham, that thing, verses, right? So, in the Kavilopadesham it will say, Prakriti Vigriti Bhinnam. Prakriti and Vigriti. Prakriti as well as Vigriti, Shuddha Bhauta Swarupam. In other words, Vigriti means what comes from Prakriti. Prakriti's activities, from that comes Vigriti. So, on one level he is separate, on another level he is one with the Jiva. When it is stuck, caught up in the body inside, if you study this body, Jiva acts independently, separately from the Paramatma. But when the body doesn't exist, when we become free from the body, then there is no Jiva and Paramatma separately. Jivatma Paramatma becomes one at that point, right? So, so both as the Satta and Asatta, Paramatma is present, and similarly in Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti, in all of them, he is remaining Paramatma as a witness to everything what is happening. In Jagrati he is Sakshi, in Swapnam he is Sakshi, and in the Sushupti all he does is he monitor our sleep. And when we wake up in the morning, he tells us that I had a good sleep. That's what he does. Jagratan Swapnam, he is a witness. In Sushupti, what he does is that he only reports back in the morning when you wake up that you had a good sleep, right? So, so that is his role in us, right? And that Ubadrashta, he is called Ubadrashta, Anumanda, Bharta Bhokta, and Bharta Bhokta Maheshwara. That's referring to him. This Andaryami who is doing all these things inside us. He is Ubadrashta, he is Anumanda, and he is Maheshwara. What Maheshwara does is Bharta Bhokta, all these things. He manages us, he controls us. Most of us don't accept Andaryami, even we are not conscious of the presence of Andaryami. Whole Bhagavad Gita is talking about Andaryami. So what is the point if you do not accept Andaryami? Andaryami's control, one has to be so conscious of that, that it is Andaryami controls our life at all stages from beginning to end. Such a tight control he has from inside. Yeah. So that's what he is saying here. Ubadrashta Anumanta. Right? And he says here, Paramalpedi chapikto dehesmin purusha para. Deham. Deham body means dehyede idi deha. Dehya means it will get burned one day. That's how much importance to the body. Dehyede idi deham. Right? And in this deham, he is present as jivatma form. Is present as jiva and is observed that the jiva is not real actually. It's just like seeing the snake in the rope. And when you bring the light and look at it, there is no snake there. There's only rope there, right? Similarly, once you get used to these verses, jnanis study these verses very seriously. These verses, 13 chapter verses. And they contemplate on these verses in the light of the Upanishads. And that is how they get their realization from. So, if you do that, one day they will realize that there is no jiva there. Actually, there is only Andaryami there, right? So, Ubadrashta Anumanda, who is present inside as Drashta, and he gives permission to all that. Sakshi form, he lives there. What he is saying is, you can do whatever you want, I am with you. I am with you, right? If you want to go and steal something from the supermarket, I will go with you. You can do that also, right? And if you want to do any other dodgy things in this world, you can do that as well. I will be with you, right? And that is what Ubadrashta Anumanta means. Yeah? I mean, Andaryami, you can cheat anyone in this world. You can't cheat him. That's the principle, basically. He knows everything. Your scheming, planning, dodgy deals, all kinds of things what we do, cover up and everything, he knows everything. Right? So, and then says, Purusha Paraha, right? In other words, Krishna is saying, I'm hiding inside you. I'm hiding there. Right? So, this body, the only benefit from this body is, of having this body, is in finding him, Andaryami, or what is called a self-realization. Krishna is saying like this. Krishna is saying, the only benefit of having this body is able to find the Krishna inside us, Andaryami, right? Just like after eating a banana, what you do with the skin? You throw it away. In the same way, if you are enjoying this body so much, right? Once you have realized that, just like when they make these different sweets, sometimes modagam for the Ganesh Chaturthi and all that, they make that sweet. The sweet part is inside. The rest of it is all just flour, right? So, once the children, when you give them this modhagam, what they will do is they will slowly break it up and only take the sweet one part of it. The rest of it, they are not attracted to it, right? So that's why it's called purnam, that what is put it inside, right? So similarly, inside this body, Antaryami is the only thing worthwhile inside. Rest of all other things have come from Prakriti and they are of not of much use, right? So, so in the same way that the children will accept only the sweet part of it, the adults will eat everything, the whole thing, right? So children are, the jnanis are like the children. They will only take that one, Antaryami, inside seriously. Rest of the things in the body is of no use as far as they are concerned, right? So, so when you take this whole thing, this comparison is to make us a little bit more easier to understand, that this body also, if you take it seriously or valuable, in that case, you will lose the, just like in the sweet, if you eat the flower also, it will reduce the taste of the what is inside, the sweet part of it, right? Similarly, if you keep body seriously involved in the body, it will not help you very much in realizing the importance of Antaryami. Importance of Antaryami, right? So, similarly, through this body also, what we are actually experiencing is, Jiva is experiencing is Paramatma. Paramatma is seeing through the eyes, because we know very well that it's only due to Paramatma's presence inside that he is seeing through the eyes, he is hearing through the ear. Through all the five senses, it is he who is coming out into the world. And that is how the world is coming inside us, which Jiva is enjoying it. So Jiva's interaction with the world is purely due to the Paramatma's journey through the senses to the world, right? And that Paramatma anubhavam experience, right? If you keep accepting that principle, gradually you will become little bit distanced from the body, freedom from the body, right? So, but initially you have to understand the principles all involved in that. Yeah. It is no use saying that this is Brahman, this is Maya. Saying like that is not good enough. All this has to come into realization level, right? So Brahman is to be anubhavam, Brahmanubhavam they call it, right? So one who has tasted that sweet, which is the Antaryami inside, when he sees anything, he will only start taking the sweet from that. That means in other living entities also, you will start seeing there the presence of Antaryami in them. You know how many times Krishna has repeated this in the Bhagavatam, in different ways he said that, isn't it? Yeah. Ekadasha Skandam, he says to Uddhava at the end, this is the only way, Uddhava, there is no other way. How to realize Krishna's presence in everything? Visarjas mayamanan swan, drisham vridamja dehigim, praname dendavad bhumav, asho chandala ghogaram. When Uddhava said to Krishna that, it is a very difficult thing for me to do, Krishna says to Uddhava, Uddhava, then only the last option I can tell you, he said, that's this. That whomever you see, praname dendavad bhumav, Ashwa Chandala Ghokharam, in every one of them, see my presence. Brahmane, Pulkase, Stene, Brahmane, Arke, Spulingage, Akrure, Krurage Cheva, Samadrak Panditomada. That was the last thing he said to Uddhava. That if you can't do anything else what I have said before, this is the last option. So in other words, that goal has to reach somehow or the other. Somehow or the other we have to get there. And that is the goal Krishna is saying there. And so But before that happens, one has to realize Antaryami's presence within oneself before realizing Antaryami elsewhere. That is required. That's the way it happens. First you realize Antaryami within oneself, after that you see the same Antaryami presence in everybody else. Right? So that's what this principle all about, right? Upadrashta Anumanda Bhartha Bhokta Maheshwara. And what we call as Paramatma is that, but inside he is present as Jiva form. In this way, who is present inside as Jiva form, that is that Bodham. And through that Bodham, Jiva, you are experiencing the world. Jiva is the one who is experiencing the world, right? And one who gets to know that, Krishna is saying that, in his vyavaharam, even if he has to do many things due to prarabdham, he will not be bound by that. That means, one who has realized this Paramatma's position and Jivatma's position properly, whilst he has been, that what he said here, Upadrashta Anumandaja Bhartha Bhokta Maheshwara Paramatmedi Chapitto Dehesmin Purushapara. One who knows about this, he is saying that whatever he does in Vyavaharam, one who has realized this, Vyavaharam won't have any effect on him anymore. He won't be affected by the Vyavaharam. So that is what he is saying. Ya eva veti, that's the next verse, you see. Ya evam veti purusham prakritim ja gunai saha sarvada vartamanobi nasa bhoyobhi jayate. Verse 24. So, if one understands the Antaryami and one understands the Jiva properly, then and understanding Jiva means Jiva which experiences the world outside. One who gets to know these things, he says, whatever vyavaharam he does, it won't have any effect on him. So, then here also, again, Krishna is taken everything from Sankhyam. This is all from Sankhyam, all these verses. Sankhyam, Kapila Maharshi Sankhyam has taken, Krishna has taken that from there. So, Prakriti Purusha, this is Sankhyam. So that Sankhya philosophy, Krishna has spoken in these 4 or 5 verses. And then he is concluding that here. Yeah? One who knows like this, he says, Prakriti and Purusha, one who sees like that, along with the Sattvagunam, Rajagunam, Tamagunam, knowing Prakriti means knowing the 3 modes of nature first. Is it not? Prakriti means 3 modes of nature. So, if you don't take into account the 3 modes of nature, then whatever you study about this Prakriti is useless. Prakriti means 3 modes of nature. So Krishna is saying, one who understands this Prakriti, the 3 modes of nature, and based on the Sattvagunam, he will think properly. And based on the Rajogunam, he will work in this world. And based on the Tamogunam, he will experience sleep and laziness. These are the characteristics of the 3 modes. A person in Sattvagunam will be thoughtful. Person in Rajogunam will be busy with karma. Person in Tamogunam will be get a good bed and sleep comfortably as much as possible and lazy. Laziness and sleep, these are characteristics of Tamogunam. Karmam all the time, work continuously, Rajogunam. Being thoughtful about life and understanding what Krishna is saying is more towards Sattvaguna. How many times Krishna has said that? Bhagavad Gita, as well as in the Bhagavatam. Sattval Sanjayade Jnanam. Rajaso Lopam Evava. Isn't it? So, all it is saying is that with this understanding that This is all, these three are Prakriti. Sattugunam, Rajogunam, Tamogunam, all three are Prakriti. Right? And knowing that, and actually, we have nothing to do with that. We are independent from that. I am only a witness to that. And these are all coming from the Prakriti. And knowing that it is not mine, he is the one who has understood Sankhyam properly. Sankhya Yogam. Right? So, such a person, even if he is doing work in this world, and due to prarabdham, if he has to do different types of works, he is not affected by that. That's what he is saying there. Sa ya evam veti purusham, prakritim cha gunai saha, sarvada vartamanobi, nasabhuyobi jayate, he said. He won't take birth again. But of course, this is a elevated state, it is a liberated situation, right? In other words, he is saying that his birth is over, no more birth. He is he has acquired what is to be got in this life. He won't take birth again. And he came to realize that there is no thing called birth or death, right? And nirotham ulpati, none of them. So, and one who is in that situation, Jivan Mukta stage, was born beyond the stage of birth and death, right? He is the proof that it is possible to get out from here, right? That means while living in this world itself, one who has succeeded in getting out of birth and death, while living in this body here, right? So, why is this Jivan Muktas in the world? The reason is that if we don't see a person who have become free from birth and death while living in this body, if an example is not there in this world, it will be very difficult to accept all these things, these signs, what Krishna has spoken. So that is why, time and again, Krishna makes sure that liberated souls exist in this world. Somewhere they are present. Right? So those Mahalmas, Jnanis, Jivan Muktas, they have been coming regularly in this world, and it is only because of that we are still having faith in the Bhagavad Gita. While living in this world, before death comes, it is possible to move out of this body and remain independent of this body. That is what Jivan Mukta stage means, right? No more identification of the body, and they become free from the cycle of birth and death. And you have to have personalities like that in this world, and due to their existence only, that this science of Bhagavad Gita has stayed in this world. Because they have shown to this world, it is possible to get out of this body while living in this body. Whereas if you say everything, like after death this will happen, that will happen, it becomes a belief system then. That's the difference here. That's what Krishna's point is. Krishna is saying that, right? So therefore, Anubhuti is given importance, right? And Nirodham, Adhyalpa Vidya or spiritual life is Anubhuti Vidya. If Anubhuti is not there, this Adhyalpa Vidya won't stay in this world. It will all become very a belief system then. You can believe it or you don't believe it. And then you can debate on that for the whole rest of the life, like they do. Whereas this is not like that. That's what Krishna's point is. This Adhyalpa Vidya is such that when there are people, liberated souls present in this world, time and again they come, and by their life they show to us, it is possible to do this here itself, while living in this body, get liberated from this body, and become free from the cycle of birth and death. And when that is seen, due to that, we are still believing in the words of Bhagavad Gita. We are able to accept it, right? So one thing very important here is, Adhyalpa Vidya is actually Anubhuti. Anubhuti means realization. It has to happen, realization, right? without giving importance to anubhuti, without giving importance to realizations, right? All these things, if you study like chemistry and physics and propagate it in that way, you know, if you keep on propagating it without understanding it properly, Adhyatma Vidya is Anubhuti Vidya. It is personalities who have realized the truth. It is based on them that this knowledge has stayed in this world, because of them. Paramahamsa, Maharshi, Ramana Maharshi, and many, many great souls like that. So many, Ramatirtha, Vivekananda, all these personalities, they have practiced it and showed to this world it is possible. That while living in this world, how to become free from this body before death happens. And due to their realizations, people have faith in the Bhagavad Gita. It is because of them. It is not a science that is spoken like other places. After death, a lot of things are said. What will happen here? What will happen there? That has no meaning. That you may accept, you may not accept it. It's just a question of belief only. Whereas this Adhyatma Vidya, Krishna is saying is that Adhyatma Vidya is Anubhuti Vidya it is. Anubhuti. Anubhuti is important. That it is possible to get this realization while living in this world before death happens. Right? So, therefore, because it is like that, if you propagate this knowledge like chemistry and physics, you study it through mind and intelligence, and if you keep propagating to all over the world, in due course of time, after some time, it will all be lost. That's a problem. It will be lost. It won't stay. You can propagate it. People will understand some things here and there, but it will all be lost. And that is the big problem. That's a big problem. Because people are taking Bhagavad Gita as though, like physics and chemistry, you are propagating it like any other subject. And people are listening to it, but they don't understand it. They are just thinking that this is all going to happen after death. No, this is not the science after death. This is the science before death. This science, you remember what Krishna said in the last verse, in the second chapter? Esham Brahmi Sthiti Partha, he said. Arjuna, you have to get it here now, before death happens. After death happens, it's not in your control. You don't know what will happen. Nobody knows what will happen. Everything is a promise only. If you succeed in getting it here now, you've got the benefit of it. Otherwise, you've lost it. So that is why one has to take it very seriously, what Krishna is saying, and it has to be the goal in life, right now, here, before death happens. If not, you lost the chance. That's all he's saying here, right? So, the essence, so in other words, the essence of this knowledge is us, basically, our own life, right? So, so if I am saying this now, it's only for the sake of me to become conscious of it. That it has to be done here now, not after death something will happen. That thinking that everything will happen after death is a kind of laziness it is. To think like that. Everything will happen after death. I am doing everything what I can. After death, whatever happens will happen. That's not proper understanding of spirituality. Yeah. So, so here itself that this Brahma Vidya, what Krishna is talking about, if I start thinking that you all exist in this body, there itself I have made a mistake there, right? So after studying this Brahma Vidya, this knowing properly between Prakriti and Purusha, the way Krishna has spoken in this chapter, right? And knowing very well that all the three modes of nature is a part of Prakriti, and Purusha is different from that, accepting in that the way Krishna has spoken there, and able to translate that into life. Yeah, that's what the commentaries on these words is saying. Right, Sankhyam is difficult in the beginning. Right, but basically. This connection with the body, that's the main topic that is being discussed here, connection with the body. And What is the connection between we in the, our real identity, spiritual identity, and with the Prakriti? That's why this chapter is called like that, Prakriti Purusha Vivekachanam, Viveka Yoga, right? Prakriti and Purusha, how it works together. So without taking into account on what Krishna has spoken here, Krishna has given us an overall picture of that, yeah? Upadrashta Anumandaja Bartha Bhokta Maheshwara Parvalpini Chapikto Dehasvin Purusha Para. And then he said, ya evam veti purusham prakritim cha gunai saha sarvadha vartamanobi nasa bhuyobi jayate. Like a guarantee clause. He is saying that one who understands Purusha and Prakriti the way he has spoken, by all means, he says, even if he does something, he won't take birth again. That's the, that's Krishna's promise on that. Yeah. And so that's an important statement, right? So these three modes of nature, Sattvagunam, Rajagunam, Tamogunam, they are present in the Prakriti. And similarly, the happiness and distress what you feel in life, that's also Prakriti only. Lust, anger, greed, they are all Prakriti, right? None of them is present in me. This realization, yeah? We are Nitya Shuddha Buddha Mukta Swarupam. Eternal, pure, fully conscious, and always liberated. This is our spiritual identity. Asangam. Asangoyam, asangoyam. Asangoyam, puna puna. Sachidananda Rupoham, ahameyavaham, avyayam. Upanishad says so. But saying that asangam, I have no sangam, but we are inside this, right? It is not for that. I am staying inside that and saying that asangoyam, asangoyam. That's no good, right? As much as possible, shamam, damam, titiksha, uparati, vairagyam, all these things has to be there to become asangam. Suppose I recite these words, asangoyam, asangoyam. Krishna said that sangam is the problem, right? But just repeating the words is useless. Krishna's point is that in order to become asangam, you require so many other things. What are they? Shamam, damam, vivegam, vairagyam, all these things, right? With all the help of all that, you become asangam from that, right? And always making oneself convinced that these things don't affect me. And if you are able to stay in that state, you become swastham, Krishna said. And we will become established in the Swarupam rather than in the Prakriti. Instead of Prakritistham, you become swastham. Right? So that is the process for the Jnana Margam. Right? If you fall away from that state, you will fall into Prakriti again. From this state, you can fall into Prakriti again, right? Because it is, this is Bhavanamayam. Bhavanamayam means you have built it up within inside you, this awareness, you have built it up yourself, right? What you have to remember is, while keeping this Prakriti inside us, you are trying to move away from the Prakriti. All these Prakriti's problems is inside us. Keeping all of them inside, you are trying to get out of the Prakriti. Right? So, so while remaining inside the Prakriti, you are building up this understanding within you, in your bhavana mandalam, in your mind, you are building it up. Right? You are saying, I am not this body, I am not the mind, mano buddhi ahankara chittani naham, all these things, I am not that, chidananda rupam, that's me, shivoham, shivoham, all that, right? So, I'm saying that I'm not this body, I'm not this mind, and all these things, I'm pure consciousness, Atma, Andaryami, Brahmam, Chaitanyam, I'm present all over as the space, and all these are upasana process, that's all. It's for practicing it. And it is a part of meditation, basically. And it is only a process for self-realization. It's only a process for that, to help us to get to that point. And the realization what you get here is what you call as Nirvikalpa Yoga. Nirvikalpam. It is called Nirvikalpa Yoga, right? You have to take those words properly. Nirvikalpa Yogam and Nirvikalpa Bodham. There is two sides to it, right? Nirvikalpa Yogam is like this, that when you are in that state, in Bhava Mandalam, in your, you have cultured this consciousness inside, from there, if by chance you fall off, you will fall into Prakriti again, right? Whereas, if this realization has happened in the Bodham level, this is all happening in the Bhavana Mandalam. In the Bhavana Mandalam, you can fall back again into Prakriti. Whereas if it has happened in the Bodham level, you will not lose it again. That is self-realization. Nirvikalpa Bodham. Whereas Nirvikalpa Yogam, that Yoganishta, if you fall away from that, you will fall back into the body, mind and senses and everything. So these are things to realize it, that unless this realization comes in the Bodham level, not in the mental faculty. Right now, we are studying, reading this and using our mind and intelligence to understand it. And we are repeating the verses what Krishna has spoken. But it has not changed our situation, right? It's all in the Bhavana Mandalam only. So that is what he's saying. It's called Nirvikalpa Yoga. Nirvikalpa Yoga means that these two words important. Nirvikalpa Bodham, Nirvikalpa Yoga. Nirvikalpa Yoga means that you are liable to fall back again into the Prakriti. Whereas if it has happened in realization here, Nirvikalpa Bodham happens, there is no chance of falling back again into Prakriti. That's what he's saying here. So, So Krishna is saying that this is how it is. Some people follow this meditation process. That means they build up this Bhavana Mandalam and stay in the Nirvikalpa Yogam. Some others go for Nirvikalpa Bodham, right? And that is what Krishna is going to say in the next verse. If you look at the next verse, 25. Dhyane natmani pashyanti kejit atmanam atmana anye sanghena yogena karma yogena chapare. Krishna is explaining that in the next verse. Dhyane natmani pashyanti kejit atmanam atmana anye sanghena yogena karma yogena chapare. So there he says that Dhyanena naam shabda bibhyo vishayebhya shrotradini karanani manasi upasamkritya manacha pratyakshede idari ekagraya echindanam tadhyanam. If you do it as a yoga process, withdrawing the senses, everything, and focusing on in meditation, doing this, that is dhyanam. So when that is done, continuous meditation is done, then one gets to know Atmani Buddho Pashyandi Atmanam Atmana Dhyana Samskrena Andhakarena Kejid Yogina. That withdrawing the mind from the senses, sense objects, right? Then pratyak, turning inwards, ubadrashta, anumanta, bhartha, bhokta, maheshwara, as he said before, and establishing the shraddha, our attention, on the vastu inside, keep on thinking like that, that is dhyanam, meditation. Meditation. In dhyanam, there is thoughts there. The thoughts in the mind, right? So, thoughts are dhyanam, chinda. Chinda is dhyanam, right? So, I am that, that Antaryami present inside. Suppose you are using your mind and intelligence to culture that awareness inside, right? You experience a certain samadhi, which is called as Nirvikalpa Samadhi, but it is attached to your Shabdanividham. Shabdanividham means that with the using of your mind and thoughts, you have got there. You got to that position, right? That I am Bodham, consciousness. I am Brahmam. I am not this body. I am not the mind. All these things, in this through thought process, you are reaching there, through thought process, right? And establishing yourself in the your Swarupa. That is Dhyanam. That is Dhyanam, right? Tat Chindanam. And through that Dhyanam, what he is saying here is that Dhyanen Altmani Pashyandi Kejid Altmanam Altmanam Kejid Altmani Pashyandi. Through that process, some people, Krishna says, they experience Antaryami inside. Altmanam Altmana Pashyandi. You see, Pashyandi Kejid Altmanam Altmanam. Altmanam Altmana Pashyandi. Anye, some others, he says, you can see the next words, Anye, Sanghena Yogena Karma Yogena Chapare. Some others, they take somewhat little bit more higher way. What is that? Sanghena Yogena, right? They use Sanghya Yogam, and through that they see the Vastu, Antaryami. What is that Sanghyam? Sanghya Nama Ime Sattva Rajas Tamavishta Gunati Prayojanaha. So, Anye Sanghena Yogena, its explanation for that is, Sanghyam Nama Ime Sattva Rajas Tamamsi Gunam Maya Drishya Aham Tebhya Anyatad Vyabhara Sakshi Bodho Nityo Guna Vilakshanam Atma Idi Chindanam. Esha Sanghya Yoga Dena Pashyandi Atmanam Atmana Idi Vartare. So, Krishna is saying, there are two ways of doing that. One, through what he has spoken first. This is in the Dhyanen Altmani Pashyandi Kejid Altmanam Altmana. That process. Yeah? And through the Dhyanam process. That means I am not thinking like that. Using my thought power. I am not this body, I am not this mind, I am not the intelligence, I am not the senses. In this way, breaking up from everything and through thinking process, identifying with the Antaryami inside. That's one method. The second method, he says here, little bit higher than this, is Anye Sanghena Yogena, what he said there, Karma Yogena Chapare. What he said, these three modes of nature is present in the Prakriti. Sattvagunam, Rajagunam, Tamagunam is present in the Prakriti, right? Thinking that those things are not in me, thinking that way, right? And seeing it properly is Sankhyam. In other words, from this, the Sakshi, which is our Bodham inside us, right, able to see that I am only a witness to everything. And in that way, moving away from the Upadhi. Moving away from the Upadhi, right? So, this is very subtle thing, what Krishna has spoken in that. Krishna is saying, there are two ways, approaches to this problem. One way is Dhyanen Atmani Pashyandi. Constantly refuting that I am not this body, I am not this mind, I am not this intelligence, I am not this ego, and becoming free from this body, and create a field of thoughts inside, and able to stay in that. And that way separating, distancing from the body. That's one method. But because it is done through that thoughts, and it has become like that, there is a likelihood that you can fall from that back into this again, Prakriti again. There is a chance of that happening. Kejid Alpana Malpana. Dhyanen Alpani Pashyandi Kejid Alpana Malpana. So, that means through this process of negation, process of negation, right? And that Dhyanam, Tattva Chindanam. another method, Krishna is saying, that taking Sankhena Yogena, Karma Yogena Chapare, where the three modes of material nature, you are seeing that you are not a part of the three modes of nature. And just like you saw you have a chain and you got a necklace or whatever that is on the chain, right? And you are looking for it everywhere. But someone point out to you that what you are looking for is on your neck. And you realize it in that way. Similarly, this finding out the Antaryami in that way, that realizing that Antaryami is inside. When somebody points out to you, you realize that suddenly that's called the Pratyabhijna. Pratyabhijna means that which is a higher way of realizing the same thing. That's the way Krishna is explaining that. Yeah? So, first process is through the thinking process and building up an image inside Bhavamandalam. And in that case, what will happen is that you are likely to fall back again. Nirvikalpam. Nirvikalpa Yogam it is called. This other one is called Nirvikalpa Bodham. That means somehow somebody pointed out to you that the thing what you are looking for is inside. And you realize Antaryami that way. So, and realizing that I am Brahman and I am a liberated person, I have nothing to do with this body, and realizing that is Sankhyam, yeah? So, this difference between these two, we have to experience it, only then you will know it. We can only talk about it, but we are neither here nor there. So this is our situation, yeah? So, but if you keep analyzing it, a little bit more time if you give it to that, and think about all these things in this chapter, then a lot of clarity will come from that. But if you don't give any time for it, simply do it, study it like physics and chemistry, and after the examination all throw it out, that's useless. Bhagavad Gita has not helped you then. Bhagavad Gita requires a little bit of thinking also. Because the rishis have spoken in one way, their style, that's how they have spoken. And Krishna has brought all the knowledge in the Vedam into one package like this. So you can see every verse is very heavy. And behind every verse is there is so much subtle things behind it. So till you get to hear something of it, you won't find any taste for it. You'll see every verse if you start taking like, it's like an instruction, traffic light rules. It won't work with Bhagavad Gita. It won't work with Bhagavad Gita that way. Bhagavad Gita, if it has to work, you have to devote time for that. To every single verse, slowly, but you have to build it up inside that understanding. Lot of things you hear from different places, different people will explain that. Yeah. So, these two things, how to go inside in these two ways, right? One is called Yogam, other one is called Bodham. So, Yogam and Bodham, both of them, right? One is Pratyabhijna. Which one? Bodham. Bodham is Pratyabhijna. Means, while hearing this, suddenly you realize inside, Antaryami is there. That realization coming. Like that, it happens. That's called Pratyabhijna. The other one is Dhyanam. You build up your meditation around that, and from that you realize it at the end. The problem with that is, there is a likelihood that when you are not in that meditation, you can fall back into Prakriti. Whereas if Pratyabhijna happens, realization comes, there is no chance of falling back again. But which is a higher process though. It's a more difficult one as well. Right? So, Krishna is saying, Esham anye sankhena yogena karma yogena chapare. So, through Sankhya Yogam and through Dhyana Yogam, you can realize yourself. You can realize yourself. Somehow or the other, you have to get it. That's all. But Dhyanam alone is not enough. And in the 12th chapter, you remember what Krishna said? Jnanal Dhyanam Vishishyate. He says, Jnanal Dhyanam Vishishyate. And normally people will say like this, better than Jnanam is Dhyanam. If you say like that, I mentioned that at that time when we discussed that verse. Yanal dhyanam visheshe dhyanal karma balatyagam tyagal shanti ranandaram. That one particular shreyohi jnanam abhyasal, that verse. We talked about that, how complicated that verse is. And often people, if you take the direct meaning, you have lost it. It will make no sense at all then. Shreyohi jnanam abhyasal jnanal dhyanam visheshe dhyanal karma balatyagam. Karma balatyagam has been given the highest role there. Karma Phalatyagam cannot be higher than Jnanam. Jnanam is the highest one. But Jnanal Karma Phalatyagam Tyaga Shandir Anandaram. Shandi means liberated state, peace inside. So, the same thing. So, there what we said that Jnanad means that due to Jnanam it has to happen. Not more than Jnanam. That's not what it means, right? Through jnanam, your dhyanam comes to a best state, better state. The dhyanam will be better if you have jnanam behind you, behind that. Then the dhyanam will be successful. If there is jnanam inside, then dhyanam will be good. That is what actually it means. But when you directly translate that, it comes out like this. Jnanal dhyanam visheshe. Dhyanam is better than jnanam. That is not what it meant. What it meant was, with jnanam, if jnanam is performed, it will become successful, right? So, so otherwise, you can do in any jnanam about anything, you won't get liberated, is it not? And from that itself, you can understand that. See, jnanam, if you are doing jnanam, if there is no proper jnanam inside, your jnanam won't be successful. Because if dhyanam on its own can become success, has to become successful, you can have dhyanam on anything in this world. Is it not? It should become successful, but it won't. So that is why it is jnanal dhyanam visheshe. Only with jnanam, if dhyanam is done, it becomes successful. Right? So that is what he was saying here. For example, lot of people in this world do dhyanam. You know that. Dhyanam means what? Completely absorbing in something. Meditation. Serious involvement of meditation, right? For example, scientists who are doing big, big research and inventions and all that they are doing. Why do they become successful? Because of their dhyanam. They become focused in something and they are devoting all their time and energy in finding out what they want to know from that, right? That's what their jnanam is. So, but he is not getting liberated though. He is also doing jnanam, but he is not getting liberated. So, and people are doing that, but they are not getting liberated. So, important thing is, jnanam means, what are you doing jnanam about? What jnanam are you doing about, right? And then dhyanam becomes successful depending on the jnanam behind it. That's the important thing there. Jnanal dhyanam visheshyate, right? Atmanam dhyayet. Atma, dhyanam of atma. Only when the dhyanam is around antaryami, only then that dhyanam will be, you can say, it will bring the results at the end. So, we'll have a short break. We'll continue after. चेतो दर्पणमर्जनं वौमः दावाग्निनिर्वापणं श्रेयकैतवचन्द्रिका वितरणं विद्यावधूजीवनम् आनन्दाम्बुदिवर्धनं प्रतिपदपूर्णामृतास्वादनं सर्वात्मा सुभनं वरं विजयदे श्रीकृष्णसङ्कीर्तनं नाम्नामकारि बहुधा निज सर्वशक्ति तत्रार्पिता निमिता स्मरणेन काल एतादृशी तव कृपा भगवन् ममापि दुर्दैवमीदृशमिहाजनिनानुरागा तृणारपि शुनीचेन तरोरपि सहिष्णुना अमानिना मानदेन कीर्तनीय सदा हरि न धनं न जनं न सुन्दरीं कवितां वा जगदीशकामये मम जननि जन्मनीश्वरी भवदाल्भक्तिरहे दुहित्वयि अयि नन्दतनुजकिङ्करां पतितामां शमे भवाम्बुदौ कृपया तवपाद पंकज स्थित धूली सदृश विचिन्तय नयनम कड़कशुधारया वदनम गद्गदरुद्धया गिरा पुलकैर्निचितं कदा वभूतवन्नाम ग्रहणे भविष्यति युगायिदं निमेषेण चक्षुषा प्राविशायिदं शून्यायिदं जगत्सर्वं गोविन्दविरहेण मे आश्लिष्य वा पादरदां विनष्टु माम् अदर्शनमर्महदां करोतु वा यथा तथा वा विधधा दुलम्बडो मत्प्राणनाथास्तु नैव नापर सर्वत्र गोविन्दनाम सङ्कीर्तनम् गोविन्द गोविन्द ध्यानेन आत्मनि पश्यन्ति केचिद् आल्पानमात्मना अन्ये सांघ्येन योगेन कर्म योगेन चापरे वर्स 25 We look at Prabhupada's translation. Some perceive the Supersoul within themselves through meditation, others through the cultivation of knowledge, and still others through working without fruitive desires. Mainly, the two processes, one is through meditation, which is dhyanam. The other one is knowledge, which is sanghyam. And then he said, still others through working. Now, I realize the problem now. Problem is this, that see these three things he has spoken here. It is my mistake that we started with the 18th chapter this time. I was under the impression that probably you were reading Bhagavad Gita regularly and thinking about it. But now I realize that it hasn't happened. So the difficulty is this, Bhagavad Gita is flowing from beginning to end. It's all interconnected each other. So when these chapters we are discussing now, if the previous chapters are not well grounded inside us, these chapters will be difficult to understand. Very difficult to understand. Yeah. Sanghyam Yogam, Krishna has spoken very clearly in the second chapter. Probably you may not be remembering all that. Now I realize that you may not be remembering that. What is the importance of Sanghyam? What's the importance of Yogam? Arjuna had the same problem. In the beginning he was asking Krishna that you keep telling me the Sanghyam Yogam, which one is the best? Krishna didn't answer that question straight away. Instead, he put Arjuna in a suspense and then he brought about all other things into it, sannyasam, dhyanam and other things to make him understand that Sanghyam and Yogam has to be clear inside first. So again the same problem is coming here now. When we are talking about Bodham and Yogam, dhyanam through Yogam through dhyanam, what difference it's going to create inside? If you have to understand that, you have to remember all the other things first, what he has spoken in the second chapter. So, I've started with 18th chapter thinking that you were reading Bhagavad Gita and probably by now, after 20-25 years, a lot of Bhagavad Gita is inside. We don't have so much time. We are very limited with time. And we were busy with Bhagavatam. According to Bhagavatam, we were busy with other Katha Upadesham, Stuti Upadesham in that way. So at least something from Bhagavatam we may have benefited. I hope so. Or we may have forgotten all Bhagavatam also now. And so if that's the case, then it's very difficult. So regularly reading Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam on a daily basis is important. And for a couple of hours, if you can spend on that, on Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, it will do a lot of good. Otherwise, you will forget it easily. Everything will be lost. As soon as you walk out of the door, whatever you have heard will be lost straight away. Hearing like that is very poor shravanam. It is very poor shravanam it is. Proper shravanam is shravanam, getting back, and then mananam of what shravanam has done, so that it become, make it your own then. Swam Shikaranam it's called. Making it one's own, yeah? So, because that has not happened, it looks like that, that we are finding now everything new again. Everything is anew. The problem is, these chapters are for those who have studied the 12 chapters, studied means properly absorbed that, properly, and that sequence, you can't change it. I have changed it, that's a mistake. That sequence is karmam, upasana, jnanam. That's the sequence. Karmam, upasana, jnanam. Or karmam, bhakti, jnanam. And this jnanam is at a certain level, only it will have its... whereas we are still looking at jnanam as a fresher. That will not work. Spiritual life begins with karma yoga. First spiritual life begins with karma yoga. If karmam is not sorted first, upasana will not help, jnanam won't help. That is the relationship between karmam, upasana and jnanam. So, what we can do is now, after this chapter, we can start from the beginning again. Because this, otherwise, I was thinking of doing this 6 chapters because we are time bound, isn't it? How much time we have, we don't know. So, these chapters are on a very higher level spoken, everything here. You have to have reached that level to understand these chapters. These 6 chapters. So, as he says, you look at this verse now. A new person, he takes Bhagavad Gita and he reads this verse, he won't understand anything. It's not possible. Because the background is not there. The background is in the 2nd chapter. Background is in the 2nd chapter. Sanghyam and Yogam was discussed in the 2nd chapter. So, if that chapter has not gone in properly, when we talk about this, Krishna is saying here that some perceive the super soul with themselves through meditation, others through the cultivation of knowledge, and still others through working without fruitive desires. What does that mean? It means that what we talked just before, through dhyanam you can reach a level. But the difficulty with dhyanam is this, that you are creating that in your bhavana mandalam. And therefore the chances are that you can fall back from that. But still it works. Then the other option, the proper one, Krishna prefers, the preferred option, is through bodham. In awareness it gets in, that is the through the cultivation of knowledge what he is talking about. Now if you don't know how these things work, then when you read these translation, you will not understand why is it like this, what's the reason behind that, yeah? So, but through the cultivation of knowledge, when Krishna says here like this, and others through working with fruitive desires, without fruitive desires, basically that is karma yoga. That karma yoga is basically a support for jnana yoga or for bhakti yoga. In either way, if you are going towards jnana yoga, you have to clear the karma yoga first. If you are going towards bhakti yoga, you have to clear karma yoga first. Why? Karma yoga is for chitta shuddhi. Purification of one person is through karma yoga. And once you have reached at that level, and then if you do upasana, bhakti yoga, any upasana process, you will see very quickly the results coming from that. Same thing with Jnanamargam also. If chitta shuddhi has not happened, we still have the same ragadvesham and all the other things, then it will not be effective. So, all this is background of these verses. All this is the background, right? So, Krishna is saying that here. Some perceive the super soul. So, any book if you take, any Bhagavad Gita commentary, when you read like that, from later chapters and start, if you start trying to understand from that, that means you won't get a proper understanding from that. You won't get it. You got to go through that cycle again. So,
So let's do that. Probably we will, after this chapter, either we go back to the second chapter and start from the first chapter, we begin again. So the thing is that this 13th chapter particularly is like that. That's the problem. We started 18, we did 18. I was under the impression that you are very familiar now with the Bhagavad Gita, and therefore the 18th chapter will make more sense because of the time limitation, because we don't know how much time we have got, isn't it? All of us are in that age group. Now any moment, anyone can go. So that was the idea behind that. At least the 18th chapter should have some effect. But now looking at it, I can see the problem that till even this 13, 14, 15, 16, all that is on a, it is for a sadhaka in a very higher level. That means he has come to, he has really understood Bhagavad Gita, but he is doing an upasana at a higher level. It is for them these chapters are. It will have its effect on you then. Otherwise not. Right? So, but because we haven't done that, it has, we did now, we did the 10th and 11th and 12th, and now we are on the 13th. We can go through this up to 17. Now we have got 14, 15, 16, 17, four more chapters. And then go back to the first chapter and begin from that. Or we go back right now to the first chapter and begin from there. As I said before, you see, this Bhagavad Gita is not something you can take it very lightly. You require a tremendous, tremendous endeavor to spend time on this, to think about it, the verses, what Krishna has spoken. And there is so much relationship between chapters, each chapter, each other. And at different times, Krishna has stressed different things. And Arjuna also heard like we are hearing now. Arjuna has heard like that. In the battlefield, Krishna spoke this. Krishna's intention with Arjuna was he wanted him to fight and not to leave everything and run away. Whereas Uddhava is a totally different situation. And Arjuna lost it, and it came back to Arjuna again later in the Bhagavadam, what it says. Gita Bhagavadam Gramam Yatat Sangramam Urdhani, those verses. Yeah? That's, when did that happen? After Krishna left this planet. After Krishna left this planet. Yeah? So a long period of time has elapsed in between. And Arjuna was not thinking about Bhagavad Gita during this time. He heard Bhagavad Gita, he fought the war, and they won the war, and that with that Bhagavad Gita was forgotten. Arjuna has forgotten Bhagavad Gita. Then this, because the reason for that is, Krishna was present there all the time. That was the problem. Because Krishna was present, Arjuna had no problem. If he had any doubts about anything, he could ask Krishna anytime. And that was his, that is why he did not bother about it. Because of, but when Krishna left the world, he started realizing that, what's my situation now? And that's what made him to think like that. And then Bhagavadam says that it has come back to him. The knowledge what Krishna has given him then has stayed inside, and it came out in that moment for his help. He was feeling the benefit from that, of what he heard in the battlefield. So in modern, today's world, most of us are in this situation now. We don't have the time. We are busy with so many millions of other things. And if you hear Bhagavad Gita like this now, a few hours here, as soon as you walk out of the door, everything is lost. And then you are hearing Bhagavad Gita next week. That's the way it is. We are not such rishis that we have got such power of comprehension like they had. It will not have much of an understanding won't come from that. Regularly, one has to read Bhagavad Gita, regularly, some part of Bhagavad Gita, and regularly one should spend time thinking about it. Otherwise, this is not going to work. This is the situation with Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavadam is a little different. But because we have only these two books, I want to talk about the rest of it, other things. Yeah. So anyway, we'll continue now for this, and let's try whatever that comes, it comes. That's all you can say about it. Dhyanen alpani pashyandi, kechid atmanam atmana, anye sankhyena yogena, karma yogena chapare. Yeah. So, dhyana, meditation. Yeah. At the moment, our dhyanam is on vishayam, sense objects, is it not? All dhyanam is on based on the body, bodily comforts, bodily happiness, and everything related to the body, in other words. Krishna is saying, instead of thinking about the body and body extensions and body happiness, if you develop that style of dhyanam for the atma, for the soul, right? That is bodham. Bodham, right? Through bodham, dhyanam becomes successful. Dhyanam becomes very effective. If the bodham, dhyanam is on based on bodham rather than based on the body. Our existence in this world is based on the body all the time. Is it not? All the time we think about this body, what's necessary for the body, what will make us happy in the bodily level. That's what we think, right? So, if it is done on the bodham, it becomes a sadhana. Otherwise, any other dhyanam is not a sadhana. Is not a siyathana. So, meditation is not at all spiritual. Meditation as meditation is not at all spiritual, right? So, because most of the people think that I go for meditation classes, a lot of meditation classes goes around, people go for that, right? And so many times this meditation, you can see the yoga groups, several yoga groups, right? They say that if you attend these yoga classes, your body will become very beautiful and you will be free from all the bodily pain and all other problems related to the body, right? So, to become more beautiful and to become very healthy and things like that. Or if you are some diseases, probably a cure for that. A lot of people take the yoga process in that way, right? And even doctors also say there are certain yogas what you can help you in your problems, right? So, for example, if you have a lot of blood pressure, some yoga process can help for that. And meditation for that. So, so that's why actual meditation is not for blood pressure. You know, it has come like that now. Spiritual life has become like that now. People think that all these courses, seminars going on everywhere, meditation courses, for different reasons, right? So, so blood pressure. One day, one person asked a sannyasi that I have been doing meditation. That's why my blood pressure is not very high now. Yes, God. Sannyasi told him, "You are doing meditation for blood pressure. We are also doing it for BP." He said. But not for blood pressure, but for Bhagavan's protection, he said. Yeah, not for blood pressure. For Bhagavan's protection, we are studying Bhagavad Gita. Not for anything else, right? So, dhyanam or meditation is not for the body, but body is for the sake of meditation. Yeah. And dhyanam is not for the sake of mind or for the ahankaram, right? Dhyanam is that thing where in that fire of dhyanam, the mind, the ahankaram, all these things has to be burned. That's the idea of dhyanam. To destroy the ahankaram inside and to destroy the mind as well inside. Only then, spiritually, you are benefited from meditation. Dhyanam becomes beneficial only if you are able to destroy your mind and to destroy your ahankaram inside through dhyanam. And dhyanam is that fire where you destroy your ahankaram, destroy your mind. So, so modern style of dhyanam is not very effective. Nothing is happening. They're running so many programs like that. People are taking to it, right? You see how everything get corrupted easily. Kirtanam, like the way Bhagavatam is saying, is not happening now. Kirtanam is also getting corrupted. And corrupted, it becomes a entertainment and it becomes a performance and people enjoy it, started enjoying it like a sense gratification. Then the kirtanam is also corrupted. Glorifications in the Bhagavatam, what is spoken, Shravanam, Kirtanam, is not happening. They will say one or two words here and there, but by and large, it becomes a corrupted version of the original thing. The original thing is gone and it becomes very corrupted in this way, right? So, so everything changes like this in the modern environment, you see. So, Bhagavad Gita also gets corrupted. Meditation also gets corrupted. This is spiritual knowledge in its pure form. And it has to be approached in the right way as it's spoken. Look at now how things are happening. Now you see, this. They had this big AI conference in Delhi. You must have heard, seen the news, right? So one of the reports is now, what they are saying is, they are saying that there is so much of knowledge of the rishis available in the different places in Bharatabhumi, at different libraries and different societies, institutions, everywhere. In its original form, it is still available, right? What they are saying is, if we can put all of them together through this business called AI and make it easily accessible, that will be of great help to people. So in other words, everybody is looking for some shortcut in life, in spiritual life also. They think that whereas rishis didn't take that route. Their approach was totally different. What will happen is, if you collect all these data available everywhere and put into AI and kept it, they are saying that everybody will take advantage of it and become spiritual. They won't. They won't. What will happen is, AI will replace the guru's position. There won't be any more gurus afterwards. Everybody will go and look into the AI to get the answer. They will preach to you after that. After they have got all the AI in their head, they will start telling you what a spiritual life is all about. So, the same thing with ChatGPT. It will happen like everybody is now, if they want some questions, they don't refer. Previously they were looking at Google, now they are going to ChatGPT and getting answers from that. There is no upasana, there is no proper way of absorbing things. Everything is this direct question, direct answer. It has become like that. This direct question answer doesn't help. Because doubts are coming from the mind. And if you get an answer from the ChatGPT or in the AI, whatever system we have built it up, that answers will only clarify the doubt what you have. It is not still going in and has its effect in the... Whereas the process is, Andaryami must hear. That's what Bhagavatam is saying. Tene Brahma Hrida Ya Adhikavaye Mukhyandiyal Suraya. That Andaryami to Andaryami is disappearing. It's becoming from mind to mind. The relationship is building up like that. So, this is all because of that absence of that spiritual culture, even among the big leaders. They have understood it in a different way. And those people who are, because they think that technology is the answer for everything. Spiritual problems cannot be solved with technology. That's a misunderstanding. We are foolishly thinking that with technology we can solve all our spiritual problems. No. Spirituality has its own path laid out by the rishis. And following that process is the only way you can feel some benefit from that. Otherwise it will be very It will be all on the surface only, like this. You may have the question, you may have the answer, but it will remain with question and answer only. Nothing has gone inside. It is not having its required result. So, here, meditation also is not for spiritual purposes now. It is for, it has corrupted and it's become for other reasons. Same thing with the, so the idea is that if your mind and ahankaram goes away in the meditation, then that meditation is helping spiritually. Otherwise not, right? So, so what do I have meditation upon? I have to have some clarity inside before going into meditation, right? So, dhyanam, there is sagunam, nirguna dhyanam. Dhyanam also. You have studied that in the Kabilam. Kabila Maharshi's teachings to Devahuti Devi. He'll speak about that. Saguna dhyanam, nirguna dhyanam. Right? So, sagunam means sagaram, form, Krishna's form. Krishna's form. And which means that includes all transcendental attributes of Krishna. Includes that his aishwaryam, viriyam, yashas, shri, jnanam, vairagyam, all these, and his karunyam, compassion, and compassion for, and his love for the devotees, and bodhidayam, and also all other aspects, Krishna's sarvajnyatvam, all-knowing power, and sarva-shaktitvam, all energy is coming in him, from him. In this way, meditating on all these things together is saguna dhyanam. Is saguna dhyanam. Krishna's form combined with all other attributes like viryam, yashas, shri, jnanam, vairagyam, and sarva bhudadaya, karunyam, priyam. All transcendental qualities of Krishna. Meditating upon all of them, right? Then nirguna dhyanam is different, right? What happens is, when you say nirguna dhyanam, it means there is no gunam in there, right? Nirguna dhyanam, the nature of nirguna dhyanam is that if you are able to, all gunam is kept away and able to remain silently without allowing chittavritti to develop inside. Without allowing any chittavritti to develop inside, nirgunam. And Bhagavatam is saying, this nirguna rasam is the highest rasam. Right? So, if you look into Bhagavatam, you will find this. Vanam tu satyo vasam, rajasam gramam uchyate, tamasam dyuda sadanam, mandi getam tu nirgunam. Krishna mentions that in the Agadasham. Krishna has given nirgunam a higher position there, compared to sagunam. You see? Vanam tu satyo vasam, rajasam gramam uchyate, tamasam dyuda sadanam, mandi getam tu nirgunam, Krishna is saying there. Right? So, his point is, Krishna's point is, that he is in the nirgunam state. He is in the nirgunam state. Nirgunam means, what basically, we misunderstand things again, because we have not understood the other part of it. What Krishna is saying is, nirgunam means, there is no sattugunam, rajogunam, tamogunam in you. You have gone beyond the three gunam. When you have become free from the three gunams, modes of nature, that is called a nirgunam. Otherwise, if you tell generally people sagunam, nirgunam, people misunderstand straight away because they are not familiar with the three gunam. So what they will do, they will think that, oh, in sagunam all the qualities you have spoken, Krishna's viryam, yashasya, shri, jnanam, vairagyam, sarva-shaktitvam, sarva-jnatvam, everything, karunyam, bhudadaya, everything. All Krishna's qualities, and nirguna means none of those qualities. That's how people think about it. No, that's not what it means. Nirgunam in Krishna's language is when three modes of nature is not present, which is a higher position than with all the other sagunam or the other qualities. That's how it has to be understood. Now that, because that understanding is not there, that nirgunam, in nirgunam what you experience is shanti, and there is swarupa anubhuti, self knowledge of the self, right? Nirguna dhyanam, and it is that nirguna dhyanam what Krishna is talking about in this chapter. Dhyanin altmani pashyanti. You see that verse? The first line itself, if you look at it, is saying this. Nirguna dhyanam is talking about, not saguna dhyanam. Dhyanin altmani pashyanti. Yeah? Kechit altmanam altmani. Anye sanghena yogena, karma yogena chapare. So, you got to know saguna dhyanam, you ought to go on nirguna dhyanam. And what's the difference is between saguna dhyanam and nirguna dhyanam? Why Krishna says nirguna dhyanam is superior to sagunam? Nirguna dhyanam is superior to sagunam. This you can see in Kapila Maharshi's teachings to Devahuti also. Initially, you are worshipping that sagunam form, and then what happens at the end, in the 27th chapter, I think, 28th chapter, he is saying suddenly the form disappears. And that's when you fall onto the Andaryami inside. So Andaryami Dhyanam, which is Nirguna Dhyanam, is a higher Dhyanam, which is not possible for ordinary people to do it. You have to go through the Saguna Dhyanam only to get there. But here when Krishna is talking about it, he is saying, Dhyanen Altmani Pashyandi, Kejit Altmanam Altmana, which is purely Nirguna Dhyanam it is. So, all these things what is spoken in these chapters is for those who have deep understanding of all those things from the previous chapters. Because Dhyanam was discussed earlier in the sixth chapter. So, if the sixth chapter is not in your mind or in your thoughts, when Krishna says here, this Dhyanen Altmani Pashyandi, you will simply take it as ordinary meditation. That's the problem. Spiritual life is a very subtle thing inside. And that do require the proper way how Krishna has spoken there, right? So, then this dhyanam, what he is saying here is that nirguna dhyanam means that you have come out of the three modes of nature and you are settled in the self, in the andaryami, inside. And so, when you hear that verse, at least you can understand that meditation is not something you can walk into your hall and do it like that. That's not meditation. You see, what goes on in this world today, in the form of yoga, in the form of meditation, is all corrupted version of spirituality. Corrupted version of spirituality. What is happening all over? Lot of yoga classes are going on, meditation classes are going on. People who are working very hard throughout the day, they want some relief. So they think that they can go and just pay a few hundred pounds and attend one or two hour meditation weekend to get some relief from their stress in the workplace. So, accordingly, the manufacturer is providing these options for them. But that's not spirituality. Spirituality has its own system. What Nirguna Dhyanam means, what Saguna Dhyanam means. And Nirguna Dhyanam, once you hear that, this meditation is not possible in this modern world, the way it has been spent here, right? And you can see that people do all sorts of things, you see. And This what is interesting here is, this modern world works on a different principle. Everything is centered around money, isn't it? Money is the first thing. So as soon as you say there is a meditation, there is a company coming out, meditation mat ready for sale. Yeah. So these are all yoga mats what you are sitting on. You are all supposed to be yogis. This is called a yoga mat. This mat what you are sitting on is supposed to be yogis. Yogi. As soon as you sit on that, you become a yogi. This is how it turns out. The industry does that. Yeah, they'll find out some special material, and without this mat you can't do yoga. So yoga is all centered around the mat now, not inside. What is supposed to happen inside is not happening. It's happening all centered around the mat and things like that, right? So there was, especially in America, more than here, when yoga becomes popular, there is so many different types of yoga mats available. And some people think that if they buy that yoga mat, they'll become a yogi straight away, right? So if you just sit on that yoga mat, meditation won't come like that. It's not possible, right? All it will happen is that you will feel sleepy probably, when you become very comfortable, right? So, so dhyanam, meditation will only happen if there is jnanam first. Without jnanam, dhyanam won't happen. That itself is the statement of the Bhagavad Gita, jnanal dhyanam vishishyade. Without jnanam, if you do dhyanam, jnanam is meditation, right? And that's what all these meditation courses are. That is all a total waste of time. Total waste of time. Why? Jnanam is not there. Jnanam is not there, right? So without knowing the goal of spiritual life and how that jnanam goes inside, and this jnanam has to happen in a natural way from inside. That means only someone who is practicing spiritual life very seriously, he will only get the jnanam. Otherwise jnanam won't happen. In order jnanam to happen, the mind and thoughts should be absorbed in that all the time. Whereas if we spend all the time in the world outside, solving all the problems of the world, where is the jnanam? Jnanam is in the world then. Your jnanam is busy with the world, not busy with the soul then. So, if our attachment to the body is very strong and the mind is always busy with the karma, body is attachment to different things, and mind is busy with the karma, and buddhi, buddhi is busy with all other things, then it is very difficult. Instead, if the attachment to the body goes away, right, these are the requirements first to proper dhyana. These are the requirements. Attachment to the body should go first. Not to be too attached to the body. Secondly, mind should become free from karma. Mind attraction for karma should come out of it. And buddhi should become matured properly through knowledge. When all these three things and the senses has to stay or enjoy, senses should only be busy in the world to the extent that without ragadvesham, without attachment and aversion, purely on a moral level, it accepts only what is essential for the maintaining the body. If it is like, and if we live in a situation where dharma is very predominant, and in that situation what will happen is the senses won't demand much sense gratification. Yeah. So, in other words, you will have better control over the mind at that moment, and you will get a better control over your mind, and not only that, the body on its own will not dominate you much, your mind. The body will not dominate your mind so much, like the way it's doing now, right? So, in other words, these things, body should be in its right place, mind should be in its right place, buddhi should be in its right place, senses should be in its right place, only then you can perform dhyanam. Otherwise, dhyanam is not possible. It is a difficult thing, these verses are. These verses are very difficult, right? So, because if these things are not followed, it will be a waste of time. It will be a waste of time, right? And whereas dhyanam can happen if these things are followed, which means body, attachment to the body has withdrawn, gone away from that, not too much absorbed in the body, right? And mind also has realized that this karma is going to cause problems. Mind is able to take vacation from the karma. Similarly, buddhi also is influenced by the knowledge. Similarly, senses are not creating ragadvesham due to its attraction for the sense enjoyment, right? If it is not causing ragadvesham. And dharmam is followed in life, and in that way, if you live like that, Krishna's point is, everything is in its right place. If it is like that, even if you are walking, or if you are doing something, this dhyanam will come. So dhyanam, that is dhyanam. That means even if you are doing something, dhyanam will naturally come inside. Whereas if you organize things and sit on a yoga mat and saying, I'm going to do dhyanam, it won't work. Prior to that, all other things has to be in the right place. The body should be in the right place, mind should be in the right place, similarly buddhi should be in the right place, senses should be in the right place. When they are all in their right position, right state, then dhyanam will naturally happen in a person. That's the way dhyanam has to happen. Yeah. So, dhyanam is our swabhavam really, strictly speaking. Dhyanam should be there, our swabhavam is like that. See, what is the difference between the rishis and us? Rishis are thoughtful people, are they not? Why are they thoughtful? Because of this dhyanam inside. They have that dhyanam all the time inside. They know what the goal is. And they have rejected everything what is not necessary in life. Too much of sense enjoyment, too much of involvement in the karma, too much of attraction, caring care of the body. All these things they have minimized to the very minimum level, they kept it. So that the dhyanam will come in a natural way within, without any effort. Whereas in the modern world, what are we doing? We are doing everything, and then in the name of dhyanam, we go into meditation course and put the mat there and sit on top of it. Where will the dhyanam come? How can dhyanam come? No, dhyanam won't come like that. Dhyanam is our natural method, natural way we are supposed to be in dhyanam. Dhyanam should work for us without any effort. But for the dhyanam to happen, we should not complicate it with other things. We have complicated life like that, and that is why dhyanam is not there. And then all this misunderstanding, right? So, due to our artificial way of life, our mind is all completely spoiled. Vigalam has happened to the mind, right? And similarly, too much of false ego inside, ahankaram inside. And with all that, and unnecessarily attraction to the body and bodily comforts. And apart from that, so much ignorance inside in our buddhi. Buddhi has so much ignorance, body too much attachment to it, and the artificial lifestyle has completely destroyed the mind. Mind also has become destroyed by that. And the ahankaram inside, due to abhimanam, that identification with the body, right? All these things together, apart from that, senses going everywhere berserk, looking for some gratification or the other. Right? And because of all that, the prana inside also is always in a disturbed state. In this condition, right, and with all this present state where we are now, if I come and sit here on a mat for an hour and I expect the dhyanam to happen, it won't happen. Simply won't happen. So all this is because of saying that this modern world has corrupted everything, has corrupted our life itself. It has corrupted our body, or corrupted our mind, our intelligence, our buddhi, senses, and is a totally useless state we are now, in the way we are, and then we expect dhyanam to happen? No. These verses cannot work for them. Krishna is saying from a very higher level. He is talking about it from the state of the rishis. He is talking about it. And we, who are nowhere near to that, completely in a disturbed state, jnanen atmani pashyanti kejid atmanam atmani atmana anye sankhyane yogena. So to understand these verses, I'm saying the background should be understood properly, from which state Krishna is saying these things, right? So where do we have to give the importance in that situation? First thing is, that is why Krishna says spiritual life begins with karma yoga. Begins with karma yoga. And karma yoga mainly relates to the body. Isn't it? For body. So if karma yoga, the science of karma yoga, if one has not understood properly, the other things will not be of much help. Spiritual life begins with karma yoga. That is why in Bhagavad Gita it is karma yoga begin. Bhagavadam also karma yoga began with. Is it not? Varahavadaram. It's all about karma yoga presented in the story form. Whether Varahamurti came or not, that's another thing. But the Varahavadaram and the Rishi's glorification of Varahamurti, if you read that, you will see Yajnam is spoken there. Yajnam is karma yoga. That's where it's coming from. So, the science of spirituality, what's spoken in the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavadam, both begins with karma yoga first. Yeah. So, when karma yoga is executed properly, he's saying here that body will come under control then. Then buddhi, in order the buddhi to get clarity, it requires jnana yoga. You see, this jnana yoga, karma yoga, bhakti yoga and all, even though we talk about it separately, once self-realization happens, they don't have any more importance. This is only in the process. And they all work together. It's not that it's only one yoga I have chosen, this is the only way. Generally we will say, oh, he is a devotee, or he is a karma yogi, or he is a jnani and all that. This is just a way of saying in this world, right? So, knowledge is required for the buddhi to be in the right place, and senses requires control so that they don't go into the world and try to look for gratification, right? If you do these three things, body in karma yoga, buddhi through knowledge, and senses are controlled, only then you will be able to practice, you will be able to have sense gratification within the limits of dharma. That is why that verse in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna said like that, dharma aviruddha bhudeshu kamosmi bharadarshava, he said. We may wonder what that means, is it not? That's what it means. Dharma aviruddha bhudeshu, Krishna saying. That kamam which is not against the dharmam, I am that, he said. So when Krishna said that, one person who does not know the background, he will think, what does it mean? Dharma viruddha bodheshu kamosmi. I mean, I'm not doing anything against dharma. You may think like that and you will think I'm okay. No, you're not okay. Why? Because these things has not happened. Body, you are not brought it under control. And karma yoga, you have not practiced. Similarly, buddhi has not developed the jnanam properly. Neither the senses, you are under your control. When these three things are not there, that means you are not following that dharma viruddha bodheshu. And therefore, he says, if you are able to follow dharma, means these three things must happen in a person. Yeah? So, dharma, based on dharma means that it means that vasana is going away from us. Inside. We have vasanas inside us. We brought from previous life. Is it not? Then vasana has to keep reducing it inside. It has to get destroyed. Vasana kshayam, it's called. So if vasanas are not getting destroyed, then that means you're not living based on dharma. That's very clear. It's easily understandable. If vasanas inside are not getting destroyed, that means you're not living according to dharma. That's what it means, right? So, but if you are living based on dharma, Krishna doesn't mean it very lightly when he uses this word, dharma. When he says dharmam, he means it. That proper dharmam is this. That body is not, body is in the karma yogam state. Intelligence is in its proper clarity of the spiritual knowledge, the goal, vyavasayalmiya buddhi, and all that thing is very clear inside. Otherwise, what dharmam is there? I live the life the way I want it and I'm seeing, I'm following. Dharmam is not what the government and society is saying. Dharmam is what Shastram is saying. And then senses also, not allowing the senses to go freely to do what it wants, right? So that means basically desire for sense gratification gone, desire for selfishness has gone. So if you live like that, if you live in this way, what Krishna has spoken, then whichever situation you are living, there itself, in an automatically, dhyanam will come to you. You don't have to go to another place to get dhyanam. Dhyanam will naturally come from within. Yeah? So, and nobody else need to teach you what dhyanam is. Right? So, just like if you wake up from the morning, from the bed, immediately dhyanam will come. About your spiritual obligations, you will think about it. All the commitments, right? So, that dhyanam will come naturally in Brahma Muhurtam, or in the evening, when the whole world outside is very quiet, dhyanam will come. Dhyanam will come. So, and it is not a created meditation, it is the natural way meditation happens to people. So, we'll discuss it next Saturday. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.